Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 432 of Radio Free Nintendo. It is our annual E3 prediction show, and I am so excited to get into that. I know everybody's been asking for it and looking forward to it, and we've waited until pretty close to the last minute. And of course, joining me for this special episode are James Jones.
I've got a bottle of Wild Turkey here. This is going to get real rough.
Oh boy. And also John Lindemann.
I'm totally down with E3 as long as it stands for Every Extend Extra.
Oh, there's nice. An E4, wasn't there too? But anyway, unfortunately, Guillaume could not be here today. We're hoping he'll be back next week for the very final show before E3 begins in earnest, but remains to be seen. So unfortunately, Guillaume is not here to share his predictions, and I don't think he sent anything for us to read for him, but maybe we can get him to follow up and come in late with them next week. So we are going to do those later, but first up, new business. We need to catch up on some more new business because there is stuff out, and it's really sad that we don't have Guy here today because he has been playing a lot of Splatoon, and I was looking forward to an update from him, and we're not going to get that at least this week as far as I know. But I can say I've played Splatoon, except kind of only in the technical sense. I had a friend over a few nights ago, and I hadn't had a chance to play it yet. And I said, "Hey, let's check this out." And it was kind of like I wanted to try the multiplayer mode, you know, the two player. And keep in mind, I literally haven't even gone into the on. This was the first time I turned the game on since
okay,
I bought it.
Okay, so this is Battle Dojo mode, right?
Yes,
okay.
Battle
so did
Dojo.
Did you do the Wii Remote to Classic Controller Pro bondage scenario?
No, I was. I think he
dark
was
in the dungeon.
Actually, I gave my friend since I had played at least a little of Splatoon at E3, and then in the beta test, he had never touched it, didn't know anything about it, as far as I could tell. And so I gave him the option of which controller he wanted, and I thought this will be interesting to see which one he goes for. And he wanted the Pro controller, and so I gave it to him. And I think. He might have mentioned that he hadn't really used a Pro controller very much. So that might have been part of it was his curiosity and wanting to try it out. But I'd say he didn't really seem to have the hang of it. He wasn't very competitive in the Battle Dojo, which was too bad because I felt like it would have been more fun. And I probably would have learned a little more about it if we'd both been at the same skill level. But I guess even just the short amount of time I've had with Splatoon gave me a pretty big advantage over him. But I did think Battle Dojo shows some promise. It felt a little bit like the battle mode in Super Mario Kart. You know, because it's only two players, mm-hmm. And the levels feel a little bit too big, but there are ways to kind of get across the level really quickly. And, you know, like the feather in the battle mode of Super Mario Kart kind of
okay,
let you jump over walls
so,
and catch up with the other guy really easily.
So are they just reusing single player, multiplayer levels? What are they?
They're multiplayer levels as far as I can tell. There were
okay.
five of them to pick from, which I think were the five multiplayer levels that are actually in the online mode.
Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't really know how to pick among them because I wasn't familiar enough with them. So I just kind of – I think we played three or four of them over the course of maybe 20 minutes. I mean, it's really sad how little time I've had to play video games. So I apologize for the very anemic impressions of Splatoon. This is the only mode I've had a chance to touch at all, and not for very long. But it's just a one-on-one battle, except you're not trying to kill each other necessarily, and you're also not doing the turf war thing where you're just trying to cover the most ground with your color. Instead, there's these balloons that pop up, and there's beacons around the map, and I don't think you can really activate the beacon. I think it just spawns balloons after maybe 15 seconds, and then you try to shoot them, as many of them as you can, as fast as you can, and then race to the next beacon. And so the beacons serve to draw both of you to the same location because these maps are kind of way too big for just two people. They're designed for eight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the beacons, they keep you moving, which is fun because the mobility of the characters and traversal is kind of part of the mechanics. And so it matters how good you are at that stuff, especially if you get killed and you kind of have to race and catch back up to where the other guy is. And yes, you can kill each other, But if you focus on that too much, then you won't hit the balloons, and those are really where you get your points from. So, you know, it was interesting. I don't know that it's as much fun as the other stuff in the game, because I haven't really played the other stuff in the game. I thought it was amusing, maybe not amazing or anything, but again, it was kind of hard to tell because my friend just seemed to be struggling a little bit with the setup and maybe with the controls. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But
now, what do you think he was having a hard time with?
You know, I don't think he really understands the concept of Splatoon because I maybe didn't explain it very well ahead of time. And so it may have just been unfair. Also, I don't know if he's ever really played many shooters at all.
That's kind of what I was getting at. Like, was he struggling with the camera or the aiming or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's not like a really big gamer, but I think most of the games he plays have been on Nintendo systems. I know he's a big Zelda fan, and he's played Hyrule Warriors and Twilight Princess and stuff. You know, we've talked a little bit about it. And so if he's kind of been a very casual guy who just doesn't play that many games and he's mostly played Nintendo stuff, it's quite possible he's the perfect Splatoon customer. Because this could very well be his first shooter. I don't know. But jumping in against me, I guess, confused him a little bit. But I do want to say one last thing about Battle Dojo, because otherwise I'd be really stretching my, you know, my limited time with it. But I did think that the displays worked out well. You know, I thought it was cool. There aren't that many games where you can play one person's view is on the gamepad and the other is on full screen on the television, and you're both playing against each other. You're both sharing the same area, and you can talk to each other about what's going on, and you're interacting, but you each have your own undivided screen all to yourself, which is, if you think about it, kind of like a cool dream of like back in the N64 days when people were putting up weird cardboard dividers for GoldenEye. You know, they wanted everyone to be able to play together, but also have their private screen in a fun Nintendo, like casual shooter Nintendo way. And it made me think of that a little bit. I think Splatoon is like a kind of an interesting successor maybe in that way. But it really sucks that it's only two player. You know, I think it would be fine if to do split screen on the TV, especially if you could still give the gamepad player his own screen, you know, something that Mario Kart 8 fails to provide. But if you could do that, having it be at least three player, you know, maybe you could divide up two on the TV and one on the gamepad. I think that would be probably a really big improvement for this mode.
Yeah, it would open up the gameplay as well, because you could potentially have some sort of mechanic where you could have like two players opting to gang up on the other, something like that. You know, and you could also have something like that player who is kind of the odd man out could also, you know, maybe get a power up that makes him especially powerful, or it opens up the gameplay possibilities a little bit.
Well, I mean, it would take it kind of back to Nintendo Land, which is, I think, was made by some of the same people as Splatoon.
Sounds right.
I think it was. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it would kind of go back to those concepts of the person on the gamepad is playing with the people on the TV, but they're doing something somewhat different, if not completely different. Mm-hmm. And they're either facing off against each other or they have to work together. And I think Splatoon would be a nice candidate for that if they can figure out a cool way to do it. But maybe that's for the sequel, honestly. That might be kind of ambitious at this point. But, you know, the two-player mode, it maybe feels a little bit throwaway just because it's only two players. And I don't know that there's that much depth to it. I doubt that it holds up against the supposedly, as everyone says, glorious online mode or the surprisingly good single-player campaign. Which I'm really chomping at the bit to finally get some time to do it this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard many people talk about this mode, so it's probably kind of the redheaded stepchild of the three.
That's what I thought, but that's also why I wanted to kind of lead off with it here.
Yeah, even
such as it is, you know, as little time as I had to spend on it.
Yep.
And otherwise, I've got a little something else for new business, but I'll hold it until after you guys go. So, John, let's hear from you next.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm kind of going through my backlog. And so my backlog, of course, has a lot of non-Tendo stuff. And I'm, you know, kind of after the Twilight Princess marathon, I didn't really feel like there's still a lot of Wii games that I have in my backlog, such as I still got to beat new Super Mario Brothers U. I have to beat Xenoblade. So there's just Wii and Wii U games all over the place. And that's probably going to be what I will tackle at some point. I have a couple things I want to go through this summer, but on Amazon they had a sale for a lot of PC download stuff. So on PC, I mentioned this a while back, but I did get Skyrim, and so I got the Skyrim DLC. They had it on for kind of cheap, so I didn't have it. I just had the base game, so I'm kind of playing through that again, and it's interesting coming to Skyrim from Grand Theft Auto V, because you realize that the two games are actually quite similar in the sense that they throw you into this huge world that you can traverse at will, go wherever you want, climb mountains, you know, kill people, steal stuff, whatever. And, you know, they just give you this sort of loose narrative. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say loose narrative, but, you know, you can go through the main thrust, but then there's a whole ton of side quests. So
the narrative is like critically, I think it's broken up into chunks that you initiate when you're ready.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. So the narrative is not something that you're always doing. It's something that you do when you've decided that you've had enough of all the other crazy stuff that's completely optional.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of optional stuff. You can join the factions and they all have their own stories is what I'm assuming that, you know, their whole, you know, you join the Thieves Guild or, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of them and, you know, you can join.
You can go to magic school.
Yeah, go magic to magic college. School, go to Bard's College. There's all kinds of stuff. So
I think the Magic College is really worth doing. It's okay. That's a fun little quest, I think. It's got a lot of crazy graphics because there's a lot of magic going on. So the cutscenes are really fun to watch.
Yep. I'm just impressed at how much easier it is to play because, I mean, you could say that my white whale is, of course, Elder Scrolls for Oblivion. Ah! You're so many times. I've pretty much given up on ever beating that game, and Skyrim is sort of like my apology for that sort of thing. Like, I think, but the thing is, Skyrim is so much easier to just play without having to worry about whether or not you're doing things the right way or the wrong way, you know, because, you know, you can't really screw things up really too much at the end. Like, you just kind of do your thing and, you know, but yeah, you know, you gain experience and, you know, you kind of choose whatever perks you want to get and all that kind of stuff. But you can't really screw stuff up. I just feel a lot more powerful at the start than I did, you know, in the last game. Like
I think Skyrim is almost universally preferred over Oblivion, isn't it?
Yeah.
People acknowledge that it's a much better game. I mean, it's better made, it's better paced, it's more fun to play in general.
And actually, and it strikes a parallel with Grand Theft Auto V versus Grand Theft Auto IV. I mean, with Grand Theft Auto V, they solved a lot of the main problems, and I think with Skyrim, they solved a lot of the main problems. I mean, you can get into Skyrim pretty easily.
So have you gotten into the actual DLC content yet, or are you just still going through the main game?
No, I'm at the start of the main kind of thing. Like, I've gotten, like, not spoilers, really, but, you know, I've gotten, like, your special power that you acquire. I've gotten the first few of those, so I'm kind of
You're actually well into the story at this point, okay. I would bet. The only advice I'd give you, John, because Skyrim is really a game that you should play however you feel like it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much to do in the game, you're not going to do it all.
Yeah.
So your experience is really kind of customized in that it's just all what appeals to you, what do you feel like trying, you know? But I would recommend that you beat the main story at some point.
Yeah.
Because it's not even all that long compared to some of the side quest, you know, like cycles. Mm-hmm. So like if you go to Wizard College, that part may take you like 10 hours to play through.
University. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a comprehensive school.
Whereas by the point that you can actually go do that, you're probably less time from beating the main story.
Yeah, like that's what I'm really trying to focus on. Even though the thing is, though, they tend to hand you side quests just hand over fist. It's like, oh, here's another side quest and another one. Even like you don't even see them coming to avoid them, right? Like most games, you can say, okay, well, this guy's going to give me a side quest, so I'm not going to talk to him right now. Here, it's just like, oh, you know, you just kind of go through, you know, you talk to somebody and ask them all the questions that you can ask them, and then at the end, it's like, oh, I got another side quest. All right.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Curious, not to dump more games you'll never finish on you.
Mm-hmm.
But have you been following Witcher 3?
I have.
Yeah, because
it sounds like that's evolved beyond even this.
Yeah.
Like this is another step on that progression.
Yeah. Witcher 3, I haven't even entertained the idea of getting into that game. I do have Witcher 1, actually.
Oh, okay. So we'll see you in about 400 hours.
Yeah.
Well, hey, John, I'll make a pact with you right now.
Sure.
Because I need to beat GTA 5. I started it a few months ago and didn't get that far into it. I got to the point where you could switch among the three characters whenever you want.
Yeah.
And that took longer than I expected. But I was really enjoying it, and then I just got busy, and I just kind of forgot about it. I really want to go back and finish it. So how about this? When I finish the main story of GTA 5 and you finish the main story of Skyrim, then we should both play Witcher 3.
I'll do that, yeah. Sure.
Because I really want to play it, and I just – it's like it's such a massive game that I'm really afraid to dump it on top of the pile of things that I already have that
someone,
I really do want to
finish.
I mean, that's – I feel the same way. It's like, you know, like I'm not going to buy that game when I have, you know, Skyrim sitting here.
It's good.
A whole bunch of other stuff. Like,
I know, James. You've,
doesn't matter.
You're rubbing off on us for sure. And I've been thinking about this stuff a lot lately after your – kind of a tutorial on how to manage your games.
Don't buy shit you're not going to use.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I really do want to play Witcher 3, but I don't want to buy it now because then it kind of just becomes yet another part of the problem. I want to I like setting these micro goals for myself. It's like, well, I'm not going to wait until I finish all of my games before I go buy the cool new one that I really am curious about, but I'm going to at least choose one, and I'm going to finish that, whatever that, whether even if that means quitting it and just saying I'm done, but I'm going to be done with that before I move on. But I just kind of like pick what is my gateway game, you know, like something to at least bridge from the backlog into something new.
Yeah. I mean, Twilight Princess was an interesting playthrough for me because, I mean, that's the first game of that length that I've beaten in a long time. And it was interesting because afterwards I was like, hey, like, you know, if I actually sit down and focus on one game, I can actually play through it and actually beat it.
I mean, I could say, earnestly, I haven't beaten a game of that length in a while, more recently than you have, but like it's been a while. And part of that is just a function of the games that are coming out right now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's on the 3S space, you know, there's these 170-hour JRPGs coming out that I'm just like, I can't. I can't do this. What do you What do you want from me?
Yeah,
but,
it's pointless.
That's like a 30-ish hour game, and that was sort of the domain of like the AA titles in a previous, you know, in previous generations. Like, you know, this was where your, you know, your THQ, well, like a Darksiders would come in.
Darksiders, I was about to say, is very. Yeah. I mean, of course, Darksiders is almost Twilight Princess 2.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a
sort
whole
of
a bunch of ways.
It's sort of like the Edgemaster version of the Edgemaster Zelda.
Mm-hmm. What is Edgemaster? What does that mean?
So it's like, oh, you're so edgy.
Okay.
It's a derisive
have you played
term
Darksiders,
for somebody.
James, I can't remember.
Yeah, I talked about it on the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think all of us played it at some point.
There's a point in that game where I'm like, okay, this is like essentially an alternate universe Lisa Frank folder here for boys. It's like I was just skulls and fire everywhere.
Yeah. The style is, for me, I could take it or leave the style of the game, but I totally love it for how it plays. And that's kind of how I feel about Zelda a lot of times, to be frank. I mean, I like the Zelda universe. I like the style of it. And I like a lot of the styles that they've used for it. But that's not the reason I play Zelda. You know, I'm coming to Zelda to open fucking treasure chests. I'm coming to Zelda to go find caves off in the middle of nowhere. And it turns out there's this awesome thing inside of
it. Oh, yeah. Then Witcher 3 might really be a danger for you.
I know, I'm really excited about it.
Johnny's lost his job because he's just playing Witcher 3 all the time. He hasn't been on the podcast in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
All right, John, any more to say about Skyrim for now?
No, nothing else, but it really does it's the epitome of find a cave off in the middle of nowhere and find something cool inside. I mean,
yep.
So,
which I loved Skyrim. I put a lot of time into it and I don't regret it. But anyway, James, why don't you do a little bit of new business game? Yeah. I'm excited to hear you talk about. I know a lot of people are.
Yeah. So I got codenamed Steam. I bought it for my trip to Toronto to have something to play on the plane, then realized this was a terrible decision. So I just put it away because that's not a game you can really play on an airplane. So I've only got through about a little bit over a third through the game just sheerly by number of mission. So like I'm on like mission 6 or 7 and there's 16 in the game or so. So, you know, obviously probably not in terms of game time because I would imagine the later missions are longer than the early missions. But I'm giving this game everything I have. Like I'm really putting in the effort. to try to get to a point where I understand what this game is and how this game works. I think when we saw it in motion and we said, oh, Valkyria Chronicles, or we compared it to the modern day XCOMs. It's like, yeah, on a superficial level, from what we saw, definitely you can get that. But when I play it, I don't get that feeling. And I'll go into that in a little bit. But the feeling I sense
an apology coming.
An apology? I don't need to apologize for it.
No, it's just a little bit of an apologetic tone. Like,
no, I'm trying to explain where I'm coming from, because right. I'm gonna issue some fairly detailed critiques on this game.
Okay.
The feeling I get when I play this game is sort of a mid-series SWAT game. I don't know if either of you guys have played any games in the SWAT series.
No.
But basically, they were kind of first-person shooters, but really it was more about, you know, employing proper police tactics to... Not the early SWAT games. Those are like FMV games. Those are not... There's a fantastic Giant Bomb premium content of them playing the first SWAT game. It's terrible.
Is Rainbow Six kind of like that?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but isn't SWAT 4 made by Ken Levine of yes. BioShock fame?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
That's kind of the one I'm thinking of.
Okay.
It's because ultimately, less so in some of the missions I've played just recently, but a lot of the very early missions, and I say very early, I mean like the first four, it doesn't feel like you're moving through a battlefield. You're very much moving through essentially a labyrinth. And there are monsters waiting for you, quite literally monsters, but I mean that in the more metaphorical sense, monsters waiting for you around the corner. And the problem I've got, because it's an open area that's just full of crap you can't walk through. Now, a lot of it you can destroy, but you just can't pass through it, you know, easily. So you're using up turns, or using up steam, as it were, to simply gain mobility. So there's a weird trade-off, which you don't know is what's behind that barrier. And in and of itself, that's not a problem. The idea of denying the player information with respect to enemy positioning is totally okay, and I get that. The issue that I've got is a lot of times, because the angles you get to view the stage are restricted to the view of the player characters. So wherever you can sort of tilt their view to kind of get an idea of what you're seeing, that's where you gain your understanding of the stage. The problem is that a lot of these stages are really big, and there's a lot of visual barriers to seeing across the stage. So it's hard to understand both where you are in place and what you're doing. So when people originally reviewed this game, a lot of them were like, man, it really needs an overhead mode. And I disagreed, and I still disagree with the reasoning they gave. A lot of it was, well, we don't know where the enemies are. But in why you actually need an overhead mode in this game, it goes more towards what Valkyria Chronicles does with it. In that game, the primary mode of observation was this above-head view of just a map, just like a World War I era terrain map. And there would be little icons indicating where your players were, where enemies that were in visible range of one of your characters were, and like the last known position of enemies that you were no longer seeing. Like, that is actually super useful, because you get both a sense of the contour without understanding all of the terrain, and you understand how the enemy placement could play into that.
Yeah, and of course, XCOM is mostly an isometric game, and
right.
you can zoom out pretty far.
Yeah.
So depending on the amount of fog of war and the kind of map it is and the characters you have in your party, you can see pretty, you know, it's not quite overhead. It's kind of a
right.
compromise between the two, but I'd say it's much more situational awareness than you have in Codename Steam.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest issue with Codename Steam isn't not knowing where the enemies are. I can sort of intuit that well enough. It's just understanding how to navigate the stages. There's lots of barriers. There's lots of, like, this platform is marginally higher than this one, so only the lion can transit between the two. So, but the lion's on the wrong part of the stage because you didn't realize you were going to need to kind of make that jump, so you've sort of shifted him towards objectives on this side. So there's a definite transit problem. And that's kind of how I've been describing it to myself. There's a transit issue here. Like, I need a GPS to tell me how to get around the fucking stage. The larger issue I have with the game, though, is kind of I'm not entirely sure what they're trying to do with it. So they introduce verticality by having these platforms, by having, you know, stages that are high and stages that are low, and they're multi-floored stages, and that works well enough. But the problem is, a lot of the weapon systems you get, especially very early in the game, work on parabolic motion. And if you're under these floors, a lot of time that character becomes nerfed because you can't use the long range version of their parabolic attack because they just hit the ceiling. Or there's too much crap in the way, so you can't really aim it. So characters like Lion and John Henry, oftentimes, while they can be useful firing over these barriers, a lot of times they're actually obstructed by the barriers. So I had a scenario where there was an enemy with almost no health that ran all the way up to John Henry, didn't attack for whatever reason. AI kind of freaked out. All I had to do was arc his attack down to hit. They ran up to Lion. All I had to do was arc his attack down, and I could kill that thing, or switch to the crossbow and move down to hit him. But instead, I got hit three times by their steam action, by their essentially their Overwatch mode, because I had to kind of reorient all of his camera views, and that was enough for the game to say, "Oh, I can shoot him."
Well, and the Overwatch mode in this game is really kind of unbalanced.
It feels
in most cases, especially as you get in the later missions, the enemies that are most likely to overwatch you can do it multiple times per turn because it uses almost none of their steam.
He got me three times.
And then you run into the overhead flying enemies that will just stun you. You won't even know they're there. They'll see you moving around a corner just because you're exploring. It's like, I literally don't know what's on the other side of this building. I want to go see what's over there. You walk around the corner. There's this thing overhead that you couldn't have possibly seen in time. And you can't even shoot it back at it before it sees you. Shoots you, stuns you, knocks you out for the entire next turn where it's just going to do it again.
Well, so, and I want to talk about that because I cleared a mission today where you had to rescue these civilians that have been frozen.
Oh, yeah.
This game's got a weird ice fetish. I don't understand it.
It seems to think steam and ice are the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, they are. They're both water, technically speaking. So what I've run into is, either the game puts me in a position where I'm constantly under fire and I don't feel like my character is hit hard enough to deal with the problem. So even if you set up a good Overwatch, your character shoots, it doesn't always stun and it may not do that much damage. So they just continue their advance and then pound on you.
Yeah, you're at the point in the game where the guns start to feel really underpowered.
Yes.
So they're fine in the early missions. And then once you get towards the middle of the game where you're kind of now entering, I'm kind of maybe on the back end of the middle game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's going to keep getting worse or if it's going to get better, but there are a few missions there where all of a sudden it feels like you just can't kill enemies.
It's like it takes Lion three head stomps. Well, that's a turn and a half. It's like, well, that's not acceptable. Like,
that's
I need to kill
one enemy. Like, you need to keep moving. Like, the game is all about go, go, go. It's like, why would I even try to kill enemies if the point of the level is just to get to the other side, and I have a guy who can literally jump 10 spaces per turn. You're just motivating me to avoid every single enemy and race to the end. And that's not really what this game is about.
And that's what I wanted to talk about, because the game isn't a strategy game. And Nintendo hasn't built it that way, and some people talk about it that way, but it's not. It's decidedly not, because it is impossible to create lines of combat, which is sort of key to a strategy game. You have to be able to create lines of combat, and then the strategy is expand them. And by that, I mean there is a clear line between where my forces are and where their forces are. And it may not be a straight line. It may be that I have a zone of control and I need to expand it. But there needs to be the ability to establish a position and then advance from that position. This game denies you that because of the constant respawning of enemies.
Including from behind you.
Yes, almost exclusively from behind you. Like, the ones in front of you don't respond because you haven't killed them yet.
That's a really weird decision. Like, it feels like maybe it's like the nothing from the Neverending Story. Like, it's just trying to push you forward in a direction.
That's all it's doing. But it's pushing
you into
the...
But it creates an anxiety that I don't enjoy very much.
It's pushing you into the teeth of the enemy defenses, too. So you don't get the opportunity to come up with a scenario to do bypasses. So there's a fantastic example of this in the stage where there's this giant cannon that you have to kill, and it can hit you when it can see you, but there's also a ton of enemies on this. There's only four of you, but there's, I would guess, 15 enemies on the stage and this cannon. And then every turn this sighting mechanism spawns, lets the cannon hit you regardless of where you are, unless you're under like a canopy. So, and you can't kill the sighting thing either, so if you shoot it, it just sort of teleports to the left a little bit and it's still sighting you.
Yeah,
so there's no really effective countermeasure except to stay under platforms. But the key approach onto this cannon forces you into open ground. So the counter here is that there's a back, or sort of like a back route where John Henry can blow up this debris behind a barrier, and then Lion can jump over that barrier. But while the debris's there, Lion can't jump over the barrier, and John Henry can't blow up the barrier to pass through after he clears out the debris. So you need both of them in conjunction to clear it out.
Jeez. You might not even take both of them into the mission.
You might not. And I think at that point you have to take them both, because I think that's all you've got.
Oh.
But even to that effect, you can't do it because you're constantly being just pursued by these enemies that are spawning both to your left in the warehouse where that back route exists and behind you. So you really can't take John and Lion, who are both very slow characters, up this long corridor where they're just going to get pounded. Because at that point you've got what's her name, the healer, and the main character, and they're out there just getting hammered trying to hold the entranceway. And meanwhile, there's enemies spawning on the second floor. So there's this weird breakdown where the systems aren't really being supported by the stage design, and the stage design doesn't support the systems. It's kind of what makes like Valkyria work, because the game system works really well, because a lot of that game is sort of based on, you know, sped up World War I style combat. There's a lot of trench movement. There's a lot of moving along parallel lines, looking for your angle to sort of take a perpendicular shot to cross lines. You're trying to use cover to cross, you know, you move from cover to cover, staying low, and then you cross when you have like these really brief opportunities that you create with other characters. This game doesn't really give you that. So you have things like the flying thing that you were talking about, these enemies that just spawn you. And not only can they just stun you, and not only are they, you know, way above your sight line, but they're actually really hard to hit because of how the shooting works in this game. So
yeah,
they're too high and they're too small. So I've had John Henry use a 2 steam per shot weapon with a full steam pack as close as you can get to this thing, and at no point hit it.
Yep.
For an entire turn.
I think you can boil down a lot of these problems down to the fact that the weapons really suck.
They do.
None of the weapons feel powerful, and you can only take two. You can only take one primary and one sub, and you can easily, because you know nothing about the mission going into it,
yes,
you can easily give a character two, both weapons being almost completely useless in that level because of the special conditions.
Yeah. And
then you're wasting your time. You might as well turn off the power and reset the game and do it
again. And I did that. I did that on a mission because I didn't have the capacity to essentially engage in, you know, combat parallel to the ground. Because the stage wasn't open, but the stage had a low ceiling, so I couldn't. I mean, John Henry's almost useless. All he had the steam crossbow, and that does no damage. So it's like, well, I can't use him here. So I just give it up. Take him out. Bring the healer in. Even though she's not very useful herself, at least she could do something. And then you've got like Tom Sawyer, who's just fast garbage.
He's one of the most useful characters in my opinion.
Because
he can stun enemies for free from long range.
Yeah, there's just
if you want to skip combat, he's your man.
I can see that.
Which becomes a very useful tactic in a lot of maps. So it's just I'm with you, James, in a lot of ways. Like I enjoy it, and I'm continuing to play it just little bit by little bit. It's hard for me to find a good enough chunk of time where I can really give the game the level of attention that it requires, because it is so difficult. I know XCOM is difficult, and I think in a lot of ways Codename Steam is kind of a loving imitation of XCOM in a lot of ways. I think it's very much inspired by that. And, you know, both the modern XCOM Enemy Unknown and the old XCOM games. But I think, you know, in trying to have a similar level of difficulty as those, which they're much revered for, I think Codename Steam kind of does it in the wrong way. It does it by making your characters feel really shitty. Like, XCOM is a game where you, like, salvage and research, and then mass produce your own alien technology so that you start beating the aliens with their own weapons. And Codename Steam is full of all these really cool sounding gadgets that fucking suck when you take them out on the battlefield.
Yeah, the steam packs, they don't really tell you the boilers. They don't give you good info on how they work. But I will say there's a one mission, and it was the one I was talking about where you had to unfreeze all the civilians, where the stage cleared out and the enemies weren't respawning. And I was able to map approaches, and I was able to get high enough to see the stage and sort of come up with a solid approach to move through the stage, and I paired out units in a way that made sense, and I was able to clear area, and that felt really good. And it felt really good because I was able to clear and hold, and I was able to advance, and I was able to be meticulous and sort of pin enemies from one side and then hit them from the other in their vulnerable area. And then I cleared out every enemy on that stage. Not deliberately, it just happened. And I was looking for like the last kit to find six civilians, and they're not very easily spotted because you don't have any overhead view. You can't spot them, even though you've got a fucking airship right above the battlefield who could maybe pass on some intel if you're not fucking busy, Mr. President. But instead, so I couldn't find the last one. And then at some point, the enemy started respawning. And not just respawning, but respawning aggressively. Like six enemies, seven enemies, eight enemies a turn. And they were spawning in one of the spots they were spawning in was ultimately where that last character was. So I had to just run roughshod through them because there was no way I was going to be able to dislodge them. Because every turn, two more were showing up. It's like, that's not fun. There's two problems there. One was I couldn't gain any informational intelligence to understand where that enemy was. And two was I didn't feel like I was accomplishing anything. Like this very... I was very aggressive in clearing that stage out, but this kind of controlled aggression I used and in the planning that ultimately I was rewarded for by having quick transit through the stage at that point because I'd cleared out enough avenues that I could move through it was instantly undone by, you know, the game saying, you took too long.
Yeah, it's like it's not really much reward there. If you know you're on the clock, like, or else, you know, it's like, I have to do this by this time or else I'll be screwed.
Like it was nice because I was like, hey, the enemies aren't responding. This is good. I like this. And then like it all just came at once in the level with the giant cannon. At some point, you know, that eye that spots your character and wherever they are on the stage and makes them a target starts spawning. At some point, it starts spawning twice. So there's two of them on the screen at the same time that you can't kill. And that cannon will fire as many times as it can. So it may fire three times, and three times it's enough to wipe out your party, depending on the scenario. So it's like, this is kind of fucked up.
Yep. There's a lot of that. I mean, I think Codename Steam might be a record for like how early in the game I realized that I would rather play its sequel.
Yeah, and I'm worried because I don't know if this game's going to get one because it didn't sell very well.
Yeah, and that's a shame. I mean, I think it's worth playing. I really do. I think it's a really interesting experiment. I think it has a lot of amazing ideas. The aesthetic is really cool. And there are times when it really does click and it feels amazing, but I'd say the majority of the time it feels like you're swimming upstream with Codename Steam, and it just doesn't need to be that way. It could be so much more appealing if they would lay off just a bit or figure out a way to make playing as these characters with these weapons more powerful, more exciting, more fun, and less frustrating.
It's a weird trade-off of there's too many enemies, there's not enough of you, and you don't hit hard enough. Yeah. It's like if any one of those was shifted, that whole equation works better. If you hit harder, you can wipe out the enemies quicker, then you don't need more characters. If you had more characters, you can hit with the same intensity and clear them out. If there's less enemies, you don't need more characters or more power. But all three of them are just not in whack with each other.
So right? And that's, if they could patch this game problem. A second time, what would
I would have them just redesign a lot of the stages.
Ultimately. I would honestly, like, the quickest, easiest way is rebalance those weapons.
And you know what? I would be okay if the enemies hit harder, too, because if I can do Overwatch effectively and stop them from attacking, I can establish good defense. This game doesn't reward you for defending well because the enemies sort of get hit by your Overwatch, like, oh, ow. Okay, I'm going to hit you four times now.
I only got through maybe just a few levels before I realized that most of the time Overwatch is not worth doing.
It's not, and that's
and it's
sucks.
Sad because, like, in XCOM, Overwatch is awesome because you have sniper characters and stuff like that, and they can Overwatch from way back on the battlefield, and they are invaluable. And if you cooperate your other characters with them in tandem, you could do some awesome things in XCOM, and that feeling you will never ever get it.
Yeah, I mean, I've played those games before and just not attacked, like almost at all, like almost avoided attack as much as I can. Because
just stay in Overwatch all the time. Yeah, I mean, you can play that cautiously, and it can still be satisfying and fun. And Codename Steam, it's weird because they spend a lot of time teaching you how to use Overwatch, and then they never really make it valuable. They just reward you for being really aggressive and rushing through enemies as fast as possible.
They punish you for not being really aggressive. And that's the difference. If they rewarded you for aggression, that's what Valkyria does.
Well, it rewards you by allowing you to beat the mission.
Yeah.
I mean, it rewards you in this like very dictatorial way.
Yeah, like you can be rewarded in like so Valkyria doesn't punish you for being slow. You can be as slow as you freaking want. I don't care. But there is a turn limit, but it's like 50. Like, whatever. You're never going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you tremendous... Your experience is based in large part on how fast you complete the mission. So if you find a way to jet through the mission, then yeah, you're going to get... You're getting literal reward.
Right.
This one, it's just... You can't do it. I don't know. There's... Like, I want to like this game a lot. Like, there's so many...
It's so close.
There's so...
I really feel like it's very close.
It's close, but the things they got wrong... Are exactly the things that have to be dead on for this genre to work.
Yeah, and they're the things that Intelligent Systems usually gets exactly right. And that is really kind of surprising, I think.
Yeah.
But it's
also
what gives me faith that if they had it to do, you know, if they had another shot at it, I think they would actually fix these things.
The stages need to be more open. Like that's you absolutely need to be, even if they don't give you an overhead map, you need to be able to see across the stage with some degree of certainty. Because a lot of times
it's such a problem that I started to wonder if that might have actually been a technology limit. Like maybe they decided they wanted the game to look a certain way, and then this is just the best their engine could.
What we talked about with Twilight Princess, where like the overworld is cut into areas just because that's all it could do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like
and it kind of affects the experience.
There are missions where I can't remember where the objective is.
Right.
And I'm like, where the fuck is the objective? I can't find it. But at the same time, I'm having enemies spawn while we're just looking around going, Marco! Looking for the end of the level. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, because you're going through this crazy maze of bookshelves or whatever.
Yeah, like you can just shoot your way through it, but then there's probably like 14 enemies that just spawn right behind that bookcase, so you're gonna get chewed up. I don't know. It's close, but man, there's some things that make tactical play impossible. Strategic play is not in the cards for this genre, for how this game is set up. And then just, like, it's so much just reacting to stuff you can't see that it frustrates me to no end.
Yeah. Yep. It's a frustrating game.
Yeah.
So appealing at the same time. Codename Steam is a weird game.
I do want to try the multiplayer stuff, though. People have said they really enjoy it.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, like that's really fun. And that makes sense, though, because...
I wouldn't have thought that that's
Well, because
really
think about it, though. You're both dealing with the same problems at that point.
Well, yeah.
So, a lot of the problems for this game come from the imbalance, where it's like, right. Okay, the enemy knows more than I do, clearly. They are reacting to things it is impossible they are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything. And I can't hit them for shit. Like, I can't do damage to them. Like, there's so many of them. They have the same number of units as you do. They have the same, you know, vision cones you have.
When and playing online, you mean?
Yeah, and they have the same power you have.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, like, hey, all that imbalance stuff's gone because you're both crippled.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, that could actually be more fun.
Yeah.
Well, maybe James, you and I should play together.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot.
We should do a little one-on-one.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, let's wrap up New Business with a very quick rundown of the very quick Nintendo Direct from earlier this week. I've got up the NWR article about this. And I'm just going to run through these, and I just kind of want to get really quick Thunder Round style reactions to some of these, because this was mostly a 3DS focused Nintendo Direct, which might play into one of my predictions later on.
Well, but, I mean, they did this last year too. They were clearing out the deck for Wii U stuff.
So in the order from, this is from Donald Terrio, our good buddy. He's been on the show a few times. And he's been, man, Donald's been killing it on the news front lately, by the way.
Yeah,
he's good at that stuff.
So, and we've made some adjustments to how we do news at Nintendo World Report. You should go check it out. But, like, we've adopted a more digest-friendly thing for, like, smaller stories. You know, we've accepted that it's very difficult for a volunteer staff to keep, you know, really tight control and really firm grip on what news is. And we've allowed our staff to sort of experiment with ways to make sure that we're getting you the readers the information that you need, but in a way that's still timely and in a way that makes sense for us with our staffing model. And I think that Donald's really been burning on both ends and doing a great job with that, but I think, you know, he's contributed some really successful ideas for how we can improve our news coverage, which I think has been very solid recently.
Well, I didn't know,
because in 2 weeks it's gonna be a freaking disaster. We're gonna have a ton of news every day.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of any of the stuff that you just said. I honestly have just been looking at the website lately thinking, man, Donald's doing a really – not only is he putting up a ton of news and it's like really on time, it's really – or at least it's timely.
Yes.
But also it's well written and it gets the information that I want really quickly, and I'm enjoying that. So
yeah.
anyway, the bulleted list from Donald Terrio's news article here on NintendoWorldReport.com. As was rumored last week, Bravely Second 2, Bravely Second End Lair.
End layer, which is
end layer.
That's what it's called. That's what it's called in Japan. That's a, that okay. That is literally the is.
Well, they're keeping up with that trend, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Can't say I'm a. Can't say
frying
I'm
approved, fairy.
But yeah, but Brave Blue Second End Layer, the sequel, is coming to North America, but not and Europe, but not until 2016.
I know. That game will be 2 years old by the time it gets here.
Yeah.
Like what? Like
very
what,
weird.
What is the Treehouse is the holdup. That's the holdup. It's Treehouse.
Yeah, I wonder if they're doing an internal localization, and that's why. I wonder if they're just like backlogged.
Yeah, like what's Treehouse working
they're doing
on?
Xenoblade this year, so that's
Xenoblade and
priority.
Fire Emblem, and possibly Fire Emblem Cross is in flight at some point, and you know at some point they're gonna have to do Zelda. They might be a little busy.
Yeah. But yeah, 2016, that sucks. That really does. That's too bad. Let's see. Oh yes. There's a new Chibi Robo game and it's a 2D platformer. I'm so sad that Guillaume is not
with swinging
die
mechanics.
Of joy on the air.
with swinging mechanics. Keep that in mind. So like,
yeah,
like,
with a freaking grappling hook. I was delighted by this.
So like this, we were, Guillaume described this as games made for me. And like I was like, well, shit! I need first my fucking org about a sequel to Nintendo. Get on there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you're just making games to make RFN happy, well, you got one.
Yeah, you got Axiom Verge. You got Chibi Robo Ziplash.
There you go.
We're having a good year.
Oh, also there was an Amiibo announcement with this Chibi Robo Amiibo because fuck this world.
It is like, yeah, honestly
because why not?
This is honestly the second Amiibo that I'm actually thinking of maybe buying.
It looks cool. It is. It's a neat looking one.
I definitely want one of those Yarn Yoshi dudes just because he looks awesome. And I'm excited for that game, but the Chibi Robo little dude is a sweet looking figure of honestly a character I would not in a million years have thought there would ever be a toy made for friggin' Chibi Robo. Like his games are not even popular at all.
There was a site conversation
he's
about
he's not
this,
even in Smash Brothers.
That at this point, true. Like this has just changed the entire equation of what Amiibo is because now
anything
goes and Nintendo will fucking make a game about any franchise if they can bundle an Amiibo with it.
Yep.
It's like, oh good, great, we're gonna get like Devil World Amiibo in game now. Devil World Gritty 3DS reboot with Devil World Amiibo. It's like, great, this is the Amiibo apocalypse future we have to look forward to.
I'm just so glad that photo finder thing is not the last Chibi Robo game. They've obviously taken him to some weird places, you know, with like Walmart exclusive DS sequels and you know, Chibi Robo's had a tough time. He has not had a lot of consistency or I would say marketing support.
He must have some corporate champion who's like, yeah, I'll just code this entire game by myself. if you put it out, I'll code the whole damn thing.
I mean, they didn't make those internally, did they?
They're Skip.
Yeah. So
yeah, this is the first thing we've seen from Skip in a good while.
I mean, maybe Skip is just because I don't know if Nintendo owns the rights to it. I guess they do.
They own Chibi Robo.
Maybe they just go to Skip every few months, like, hey guys, I know you guys need some work. What if you made another Chibi Robo game? Like, fuck it, just give us the money. We don't care. We'll make a Chibi. You want to put an Amiibo in it? Great, done. Give us the cash.
Yeah. I think 2D platformer, fine. I mean, it looks different enough from, you know, Nintendo's, from all the Marios and Kirbys, certainly. I think it looks different enough that I definitely want to play it. I think I'm perfect. I kind of do hope they go back to the more 3D platformer / adventure-y style of the original Chibi Robo at some point. I would love to play another one of those, but... I think this is a perfectly fine use for Chibi Robo, and it looks delightful to me. So, I'm thrilled that character is still around, and I'm excited for it. So that's coming out this October. A new Dr. Mario game, Miracle Cure. I don't know if we really want to talk about this.
I mean, they've taken all the different types, flavors of the bad doctor, and just jammed them into one game. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And then they put that weird like touch mode.
Like, well, that's been in a bunch too. I mean, that was in Brain Age.
That's even. True. You're right. Yeah. They basically just gave you one home for all your Dr. Mario styles.
Yep. It's like ultimate Dr. Mario. Okay, great. I mean, I don't like Dr. Mario that much, but
yeah, me either.
Some people, that's like one of their favorite video games. So
Dr. Mario Suppository Edition.
I think they always sell really well too.
That's, you know, not like, where that pill goes.
Do you remember even that crazy Dr. Mario 64 that came out really late?
Oh my god, yeah.
And was kind of overpriced for what it was, but that thing sold really well.
It was like $70.
Yeah, it was crazy. And a bunch of people bought it and a bunch of people loved it. So I can see why Nintendo releases at least two Dr. Mario games for pretty much every platform that comes out, because they seem to do really well, even though it's pretty much the same thing over and over again. But
it's games like this. That's why we have the problem with prescription drugs in this country.
That's right. Yeah, this is Ritalin culture.
It's art imitating life.
They did show one feature, which is you can fill up a meter when you keep clearing out viruses, and when it fills up, you get a power up that does something, and it helps you
something
clear more viruses. I mean, okay, fine. That sounds like it would make Dr. Mario a little less boring to me, but it's not really game-changing, I don't think. But like I said, man, people love them some Dr. Mario, so it'll be a nice thing to have digitally on the 3DS, I think. It's just because always there, ready for you to play it.
That's a pretty long talk always for a game there. We didn't even want to talk about.
I know.
Take your pills.
What did you guys see this little Battlers X experience?
Yes.
No.
What is this? Is this like a good? Is this like a serious, real game, or is this just kind of some weird Japanese license bullshit?
Can it be both?
Yeah, kind of. I guess.
It is a transmedia property.
God, is this those like games.
Is this like that crappy Attack on Titan 3DS?
No,
game?
God, no, that game's garbage.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm wondering.
Attack on Titan is garbage. So this is not garbage. But this was originally like a manga, then it got turned into an animated series, and then there was a game made. The game itself is my understanding, a little bit like a game that
Custom
we talked
Robo, I've heard.
That's not the one I was going for, though.
Oh, Gacha Force?
Yeah!
Ooh, dude, if this really is like Gacha Force, then I might care.
But it's got like a bajillion parts in it, and you just throw crap together on all these robots, and it just... it's kind of a frenetic combat game.
Mm-hmm.
It is, however, a level 5 game.
Huh.
Have they made
anything like that in the past?
Level 5's made a lot of games. Like they've done a lot of games.
They're not really known for a lot of action games though.
I mean, the Inazuma games have action in them. Jeanne d'Arc has a bunch of action in it. I mean, it's not their normal area, but I mean, they've done some in the past.
Okay.
It's weird.
It looked kind of nice, I thought. I was like, I don't know what the hell this is, but this looks okay.
Yeah, it's, so the TV show came out in North America, I want to say last year. So it started airing. So this is sort of the, let's catch them up with the 3DS game. I don't remember which one this is though, because a lot of these games were on PSP originally, I believe. It is a game that people knew about in the West though. Like people know this game, so they're not. It's not like
Yo-Kai Watch.
Yeah, they didn't just pull it out of a bin somewhere. It's right.
Danbo
Senkai Baku Boost.
So okay, maybe it has a good reputation. That seems like maybe worth keeping an eye on. Maybe that'll be playable at E3.
There's
Mario and Sonic at Olympic Games.
It's back.
And then there was a couple of Wii U things. Actually, they tucked them in there. This might tell you how important they think these are that they didn't save this for E3. There's a new trailer for Project Treasure.
Yeah, there is.
Which is that weird Namco Bandai thing, or Bandai Namco, I mean.
The freemium game. Well, it's really a teaser more than anything. I mean, it's behind the back shots of characters.
The game might look like that. I don't know.
Like the game does play like that.
It doesn't look like anybody even edited it. It looks like they just took some footage and threw music on and said, done.
No, there's a lot of editing. It's just, it's very disjointed and hard to tell how the game plays from that trailer. But it looks like four characters can play at the same time, and you go around and you hack and slash up a bunch of monsters. I mean, it looked a little bit like multiplayer Dynasty Warriors to me.
I'm interested where the freemium part comes in, the multiplayer comes in, and I think we'll hear about that soon. I think this is just kind of like their mind, like, hey, this game really does still exist.
What if they went really hard and actually just made it like cosmetic stuff? Like, what if the game really was free to play?
That would be weird.
You see it all the time on PC and almost never on consoles.
Yeah. I mean, that would be... I'm not sure if they've done that before, Namco Bandai. This is kind of a weird place for both Nintendo and them.
Definitely seems experimental.
So what else is on the list?
Not that much. I mean, Art Academy Atelier.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that's the Japanese. North America Art Academy Home Studio.
Yes.
And then, oh, that's nice. In Johnny's Europe, if you own Sketchpad, you'll get a $4 discount, but I guess that's only in Europe.
Yeah, that's a
so this
thing.
Is a. I thought this was DLC for Sketchpad. This is a separate release. Weird. Okay,
then,
well, it's a sequel to Art Academy on the Wii U. Yes. So there you go. Yeah. So I thought it was a pretty nice direct overall. And,
there's some
Chibi Robo just.
There was a Japanese direct 2 days before this on Sunday, and that's sort of what this spawned into. A lot of the stuff sort of transited over from that one.
Yeah, it's mostly the same, right?
But there's one thing that's not mentioned in that wasn't the Japanese one, which is there are two Monster Hunter games coming on the 3DS.
Whoa.
Two new Monster Hunter games.
Monster Hunter X?
Cross.
Sorry.
Monster Hunter Cross.
Sorry.
And then what's the other one? It's Monhan. Pachi flavorant goodness. I don't know. It's this weird like.
Is it Monhan Hunters?
It's an adaptation of this cell phone game they put out that stars the Felines. Your cat people, but it's just like an entire game of just those cats. It's weird. It is a. I don't want to say a remake. It is a sort of expanded version of that. This is not, however, free to play like those games were. So maybe this is part of Nintendo's campaign of converting free to play games into more full formed 3DS titles, because they've done that with a few games now at this point. I'm looking for the name.
Poka Poka Iru Village DX.
Yeah, that's it. Poka Poka Iru Village DS.
Yeah.
I mean, what? What the fuck? They also announced some Wii games. Oh, and they showed more Fire Emblem stuff, including base building, and a mode like in that Pokemon game where you could pet your Pokemon, only it's with your friends.
Oh, great.
So pet your anime waifus in Fire Emblem IF.
Oh, great.
Thanks. Thanks, Intelligent Systems.
Great.
Fire Emblem, a game about slashing people with swords and magic. Okay. Let's wrap up new business and take a quick break for Now Playing. We'll tell you about what's happening over at NWR, and when we come back, we're going to do our E3 predictions.
It's Now Playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. It's been a few weeks since I tried to put an introduction on this, and we already have one at the beginning. So I'm feeling pretty good about, like, I'm not going to screw this up anymore. And we're always going to get straight into it.
We can always screw it up more.
Damn it, I just screwed it up! Anyway, we got a preview. Xenoblade Chronicles X for the Wii U by Danny Bivens. It's been kind of an open secret around here. We've known for a while that Danny likes to play with dolls. He calls them action figures, but whatever. He also likes to play with Xenoblade Chronicles X, in which the robots you control are, coincidentally, called dolls in Japan and scales here. But the two topics are unrelated. Anyway, he also likes to talk about online play, but mostly about dolls. I didn't think we were talking about that. I thought we were going to try to keep that secret. Some secrets.
You know, some things, they just tend to come up, you know.
Broken. Anyway, we have a review of The Adventures of Pip for Wii U by Zach Miller. Pip is a character that adds pixels in order to do slightly new things while deep down staying relatively the same. My guess is that this game is a meta-commentary on most third-party games, but I digress. If you're curious about this new platform, Zach's review should let you know if it's worth your time.
Get it? You know, third parties, always doing the same thing over and over. Pixels, well, resolution, yeah, I mean, you know.
In this case, what they're doing is nothing.
And we have a review of Lord of Magna, Made in Heaven.
Yep, made in heaven.
Ooh, M-A-I-D-E-N, heaven.
Yes.
For 3DS by Donald Theriau. I'm pretty sure Donald is the JRPG with maids guy, meaning that if we get a review copy of a JRPG that specifically has anime maids in it, it goes straight to him. This process works perfectly with this review, aside from the fact that he doesn't know where to shop or craft in the game, but he's counting.
To be fair, this would have been my job, mm-hmm. but at some point, I fell off the wagon, I'm sending Donald all my body pillows, that's what I'm saying.
So you're saying that he inherited the mantle? Whatever mantle that may be?
It's not really a mantle, and he should definitely have it washed a couple times.
Ooh, all right, and then we have a preview of Skylanders Superchargers by... Who do you think did this, James?
Was it you?
Ah, you're wrong. It's Neil Ronahan.
What?
And it's for Wii U. Neil, Toy to Life Ronahan, gives us his thoughts on the newest Skylanders game through the eyes of a franchise veteran.
Veteran does not describe.
Do the vehicles open up gameplay? Because you know this adds vehicles. I know you're a big fan of this, James, so I know you already know that.
I've already bought my portals.
Will you open up your wallet? Neil gives you the first answer. The second answer is yes, especially if you have children.
And unlike amiibos, you can actually find these.
Mm-hmm. And actually do something useful with them. Oh!
You can find this and more cogent commentary on the state of plastic crap right now at the world capital of plastic crap, NintendoWorldReport.com.
Welcome back, everyone. It's time, finally, for our annual E3 predictions. We groan a little bit every time that we do this, but everybody loves it so much. And honestly, it is fun. It hurts to be wrong. It hurts to be so, so wrong.
But it feels right.
It is. It's fun to do. It is fun. So I figured before we get into our predictions for this year, let's recap our success ratio for 2014.
Okay. Here we go.
Yeah. And this summary comes courtesy of... Mr. Steven Salvatore, who answered the call out on Twitter when I asked for a little bit of help putting this together at the last minute, and I really appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir. You're enabling this part of the show.
Yeah, you're an enabler. I just
you are an enabler. Yes, I was waiting for somebody to jump on that, and just nothing happened. This is your fault.
All right, so keep in mind everything that went down at E3 2014 and everything that's happened since then. Keep that in mind. These are from 1 year ago. I said that, and this is all, I'm just assuming that Steven's descriptions here are accurate because there's no way I'm going to remember what we said 12 months ago. I said there will be a focus on the gamepad, which I might take credit for because, you know, there was the weird...
Just say Splatoon.
And Project Giant Robot and Project whatever the other one was and Star
Guard.
Fox.
Project Guard was focused on yelling at people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there was a focus on the gamepad. That was me, you know, we knew Miyamoto was going to be doing something with that. I said, there would be some kind of single player mode in Smash Wii U based around the gamepad. No, not really. Nothing specific to the gamepad, really. I said, Metroid will make quite the return. Can I just copy and paste this one into my new
predictions?
We've
been doing that every year for like the last 4 years.
I tried not to this time, but I said a Retro Studios developed 3DS Metroid game would be made in a 2.5D presentation.
It's wishless. Oh, it's wishless material at this point.
I know. Like, this isn't. I also said there'd be no Nintendo games outside of Nintendo's booth.
Well, that was...
I mean, might have been one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there was... God, Natsume and Xseed all had games.
Okay.
Yep. Capcom had a game.
I failed there, but I was pretty close. That's just trim
Capcom,
watching,
Capcom
man.
Had two games.
Yeah,
they had,
Capcom had a couple.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. That'll be interesting
I did those
to revisit that one this year. But yeah, it's a lot of the third party stuff is from independent developers who usually don't have booths. So
or Nintendo,
anyway,
even if they aren't Nintendo, usually hosts them. I mean, those were exceptions. Xseed
in right. Those were in Nintendo's booth. That was kind of my
Atlas
point last year. Is that
Natsume are just publishing houses?
Yeah, I mean, I was saying that even companies who are making Wii U games won't show them in their own booths. They'll just stick it in Nintendo's booth. That has been kind of a increasing trend over the years. Anyway, my last one was I said a lot of people expect Zelda Wii U to show up. That sounds like not a prediction, but just a...
That's just a statement.
Yeah, that sounds like it just kind of a look at the landscape at the time. It seemed like the chatter was really strong and that Zelda would show up. And of course it did in a pretty, I won't say a big way, but it sure did cause a lot of hype.
Did it... it was originally shown at E3, I guess, wasn't it?
Debuted in the the press conference replacement Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, it was at the very end, or nearly at the end. It
made my E3 basically watching that, so... all right, John didn't have much, apparently. He said Nintendo is going to announce a Metroid game for the Wii U that will be a first-person shooter, and it will be a competitive, or maybe it will. There will also be a competitive version of Prime.
Wish list material. Yeah. Pure wish list.
And that's the only one listed here, John, so I don't know if maybe I might have stolen one of yours or something. It says James only had one also, and that was that Hyrule Warriors is the only Zelda game at E3. There will be no other Zelda game at E3.
It wasn't at E3, so I'm going to take that one.
No, come on, technicality. And then Guillaume said, Next Level Games will have a new Punch-Out for 3DS. It is not a Wii port. That one has not happened, at least not yet. Guillaume said, on Wii U, they're not going to have any third party showcased in their booth, but maybe indies. He was wrong there. Like you said, there were a couple of third party games. There's Sonic Boom, of course.
Oh, yes, of course. Sonic Boom.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, there were a couple. And there were also some indies, and I hope that will continue because I like that trend. And he says, in 2014 would be the last E3 that will see indie interest in the Wii U, which is a little bit of doom and gloom, but also we can't technically say whether that one's true or false
because
we have to see this E3 to find out whether last E3 was the last E3.
But I would say like the Humble Bundle that they just did tells us that engagement's still very high.
Yeah,
I think that not only that, but I think it probably is helping indie interest in Wii U. By showing that there's enough good games that you can actually do a really great Humble Bundle that's like so amazing that a bunch of people are talking about.
And keep in mind that Nintendo was the organizer of that Humble Bundle, and every game in there basically is a different company they had to make a deal with.
Yeah.
So like they were that was a lot of work for some people.
It's pretty awesome. The only reason I didn't get it because I already had almost all the games. And I just decided that I would have gotten so many duplicate keys that I didn't want to go through the effort of giving them out because there's going to be a ton of bonus keys lying around from people who bought these in the first place and decided to go ahead and get the bundle anyway because it was really pretty an amazing bundle. I would guess the average was probably hovering around $10.
In fact, I just bought it today.
What was the average when you did it?
I think around 10. It was a little bit under.
Yeah. Yeah, in I think for most of the Humble Bundles, the average ends up being about 10. But yeah, for $10, you get about a dozen really mostly excellent Nintendo independent games.
921.
I think the only like really huge release on Wii U or 3DS that's not on there that I think people would have wanted is Shovel Knight, and I would guess that's because Shovel Knight is still kind of.
It's still coming out on other platforms. Like it came out.
Yeah, and they're working
on
a giant DLC for it that's free.
Yeah, and keep
in mind,
they're going to
be relaunching that kind of
super early on Wii U.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I'll have a Gunman Clive one to just set on fire. I'm not giving that out. I'm going to bury that code.
You should give that to someone who will give it the adoration that it deserves.
Yeah, they should bury it in the ground.
I was looking for a second code. That game is so good.
John's like, I really want my whole life to move slower. Can you give me a second?
Steamroll Dig, and we don't have to go through all, but yeah. It's really a pretty fantastic set. So yeah, I think it'll be over by the time anybody hears this, but it's been discussed enough that I hope everybody who would have been interested in such a thing found out about it because I think you'd be crazy to not at least play those games, whether you bought them originally or get them in the bundle. You're going to be very happy that you did. But anyway. So it remains to be seen whether there'll be more indie interest in the Wii U, but I suspect that Guillaume will turn out to be wrong there and that it will continue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with stuff like Yooka-Laylee and Bloodstained from
Bloodstained's
Igarashi,
already coming out, yeah.
Igarashi and Mighty No. 9 coming out this year. I think the indie interest in Wii U is going to continue strong. There's also the Adventures of Pip just came out today, and that's been getting really strong buzz. So
and then, I mean, they were super involved in Affordable Space Adventures. Like they were very involved in that game's promotion.
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as Nintendo
had time to even play that.
I think as long as Nintendo keeps putting out big first party titles, and I think all the indies will be happy to fill in the niches.
Yeah, there's not as much stuff for them to compete with.
Exactly.
As sad as that sounds.
Yep. I mean, the lack of third party on Wii U actually opens up lanes for them. So
that's an interesting viewpoint, but I think you might be right. Yeah. That might actually work out for at least some of the most prominent indie games.
Yep.
You know, the ones that can kind of get enough word of mouth that people really do go look for it and are willing to spend 10, 15, 20 bucks on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Humble Bundle is really excellent for word of mouth. It's really great for kind of promoting your next game. You know, if you notice, a lot of the developers that are part of that Humble Bundle have another game coming out soon.
Yep.
Like Renegade Kid and the SteamWorld guys, a bunch of them. So it could work out really well for them. I hope so. And by the way, one last prediction from last year is that we apparently all of us said Amiibo not a big focus at E3. I think
that was
pretty wrong.
E3?
There wasn't that much to show just because we didn't get to play with them. They were just on display, but they basically announced the full Smash Brothers lineup. I mean, it was a pretty humongous deal, I thought.
Yeah, but they didn't really make a huge deal out of it. They showed that, you know, you put it in there and they had the figure player and they showed it fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Because Iwata did his stupid little head thing when he couldn't win the match, dropped the Amiibo on there and it fought next moment. But that was pretty much it.
I think it was enough. I think it was enough to ignite the flame that we now
know
as Amiibo.
But they didn't see that coming either. Like
if
they did, it wouldn't have been that big of a dumpster fire to get Amiibos.
Well, maybe,
I mean, this
you might be right.
this happened. Jeff Gerstmann pointed out that this happened with Skylanders originally too. Like you just couldn't find Skylanders. You couldn't find them in that first wave. So, you know, you would think Nintendo would have been aware of that.
You know, bureaucracy, corporations.
Iwata apparently has taken credit for these things, so I mean, you would think the bureaucracy would be short circuited.
Yeah.
On a train, by the way.
Well, it's not the first thing that Nintendo thought that nobody would want.
That story it just sounds like something that's made up.
Yep. Like, how's about the Wii component cable? How's about that? Nobody will want that. No one wants those.
Nobody will want it.
I'm trying to find one of those now, John. Thanks.
Man, I wish I still had mine. They're worth a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's move into our actual E3 2015 predictions.
Can we first clear the ground with stuff that we're all pretty sure will be there? Like, stuff that's not really predictions.
I don't know that we need to. I think if those come up, the other two of us will call bullshit and say, that's not really a prediction. We know it's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, in that case, can I point out one that I'm not predicting because I think it's pretty clear it will be, but you guys might disagree.
All right. Let's hear it.
I feel pretty confident that the Fire Emblem Cross game will be there because they've been pushing it in Western territories, even though the game is supposed to come out this year, at least in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I don't think it's going to come out here because it would be competing with Oxygen with Xenoblade Cross, which, what, frickin', stop it, Nintendo. But, like, they've been pushing that game pretty hard in the Nintendo Directs recently, so I feel like it's pretty good bet that game will be at E3.
That's reasonable. It's reasonable.
Yeah, I don't want to put it as a prediction though, because other predictions I have are predicated on that being there. So
I'll be a little surprised if it's playable.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it'll at least show up in the digital event because that essentially is Nintendo's biggest commercial of the year.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
They're going to want to show that as like this really crazy looking Wii U game that's coming out sometime.
I was thinking kind of like how they did Xenoblade last year, where there was that one that was playing video the whole time. They had Treehouse streams for it, stuff like that.
Interesting. It'd be cool to see them play through a demo of the Japanese version the way they did with Xenoblade.
Yeah, and of course Xenoblade will be playable because that game is done.
Oh yeah, Xenoblade is
That
doesn't need to be a prediction. Xenoblade is coming out this year, and it will be playable at E3.
Yep. In English?
Yeah.
It's got to be in English.
I think it better be in English. Yeah. If they want people to take this seriously and actually attract adequate attention from the media and from the retailers and everybody else who's at E3, that needs to be in English.
Can it still be Japanese VAs with English text?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm sure that they're pretty deep into translating that anyways.
Yeah. What was the other one that I wanted to make sure we all agreed was going to be there? I'll think about it later.
Mario Maker.
Mario Maker's going to be there for sure.
Yep. And Star Fox will be there, obviously.
I suspect that Star Fox will come up later, but I'm curious of that.
I mean,
that
they said it'll be there.
I don't know that Star Fox is like a slam dunk that it's like a big holiday title this year.
No, but I mean, it will make an appearance. I mean, they've said that.
I think they will have to at least mention it, but I think the mention could be we're still working on it and we're not ready to show it to you yet.
Okay. I think it'll be shown. I think it'll be shown.
I think it will too, but I think there's a distinct possibility. I don't feel like Star Fox is a slam dunk because they've been so silent on it, and it was so supposedly so early last year, which is not that much time.
I think it'll be there just because they probably have enough to show off the gameplay concept. You know, it wouldn't be something. It would probably be a concept that they would be able to just easily get across to people in a short video, anyways.
This is what this game is.
Unless it's something that I am completely anticipating it not to be. Okay. This is a Star Fox RPG. Wait a minute.
Yeah. This is an adventure game where you pal around with a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to compete with No Man's Sky. Yeah. The new Star Foxes.
No Fox's Sky.
They're coming out. Actually, they're going to come out on the same day.
Yep.
And we're going to see which one wins.
Procedurally generated slippy comments.
It's going to be Star Fox Hound, which is a cross with Metal Gear Solid.
It's a Star
this
Fox
This is the
Kojima
next
production.
Hideo Kojima game.
That is Kojima's next big thing.
That would be that would Star Fox. I would buy 10 copies of that game.
Oh man. Okay, no, that's not a real prediction. No. I'll set out a real one. I've got 5 here unless there's overlap with someone. And I think this one's pretty safe, but it relates to some topics we've already touched upon. I'm predicting that the digital event will focus on Wii U more than, I mean, there'll be some 3DS, but it will be predominantly about Wii U. As we discussed earlier, they've kind of already taken care of some of their key 3DS announcements. And also Amiibo, I think that will also be a significant focus. I mean, it will take up at least several minutes of their digital event, which is a lot.
Yes.
Much more prominently than last year.
It'll be a main topic.
Yeah. To piggyback on that, I have one that kind of dovetails with that. And I am.
Hang on. Let me finish first because they might.
It goes hand in hand with what you just said in terms of, of announcing Amiibo.
I'm going to let you finish my prediction.
No, but the end of this one is that the Amiibo announcements will include retro figures for Mario Maker.
Okay.
Like Pixel Mario Amiibos and like, you know, new Super Mario Brothers Amiibos.
I am saying that they will have a line of Xenoblade Chronicles X Amiibos with maybe a limited one shipping with the game.
Okay.
Amiibos. Yeah,
a special version of the game.
They're doing that with Chibi Robo.
Yep.
So, that seems completely plausible. James, you got any more?
About Amiibos? No, I don't have anything about those.
Okay, well, pick a new topic.
All right. I'm going to try to go from my my least controversial to most. I'll go with one of my more basic ones here. Let me lay some ground foundation. So, every E3 since my first one, which was 09, which was the new Super Mario Brothers Wii demo year, Nintendo has always...
Where we played with Martinet?
Yeah, we did.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Nintendo has always featured in a very prominent role a console game on a big screen in the back corner of their booth, and then in large areas throughout the booth in a very, presented style, a multiplayer focused game that is frenetic and high action. In addition to that, in the last couple E3s, Nintendo has been very, very emphatic about introducing a new, a new character set, a new franchise. In fact, last year they did it twice. They did Steam and they did Splatoon.
True.
I don't see on their calendar where this big multiplayer game is right now. It would have been Splatoon, but Splatoon came out already. So to me, that means Nintendo has a big multiplayer-focused game that's really fun to play and watch people play. That's a key component of this. Last year, it was Smash and Splatoon in tandem. Splatoon sort of stole Smash's thunder a little bit, but you can tell they set up that they had set up their booth for it to be Smash because they had that big, huge display,
yeah,
the big projection wall. A game that is fun to watch people play in groups together locally. Splatoon's kind of a tricky one there.
I think that might be Mario Maker.
You think so?
Yeah. I think when they throw video of people making Mario levels up on the giant screen, anyone who walks by is going to be attracted to that.
Yeah, but I mean, I did it. It's not very interesting to watch the process.
Well, it might be more so now.
But to me, I'm predicting they've got another multiplayer, you know, online focused evergreen title with a new set with a new franchise or a take on an existing long dormant franchise. That they are going to push out the door. Something we don't know about.
If this is true, it's going to be a 2016 game because I think they're going to give Splatoon some space.
Yeah, this year. I know. I think it'll be kind of like Splatoon where it's, you know, second calendar quarter, and I suppose fiscal quarter 2016.
Mm-hmm. Summer game of next year.
Yeah, like something that'll be in Splatoon slot. I think they have spoken about this a lot very recently about trying to produce these titles that have very long tails. And this is one of the things they say contributes to it, having a healthy multiplayer, especially a healthy online multiplayer component. They say that gives those games long-lasting value beyond the initial 2 weeks when they come out.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's a way for them to maintain the high retail value.
Yes.
Continue sales. Evergreen, like you said. Well, yep. I like that theory. What about you, John?
All right, next one? James spoke about evergreen games, so in that on that note, I predict that at E3 they will announce. You know, okay. Well, let's talk about Splatoon specifically.
Splatin.
All right. So we know what the DLC plans are out to about August, right?
Yes. Well, sort of.
Well,
we have a rough outline of what they are.
Yeah, yes. You have a rough out. You know, you're going to get maybe like a couple more modes, some more maps, and stuff like that.
And the multiplayer stuff.
Yes, yes. I predict that they will announce a Splatoon expansion to come out early 2016. Hmm. It will add maps, and this is not just like a trickling of a couple maps, a couple modes, new guns, whatever. It's going to be a lot more content. In the vein of New Super Luigi U, where they charge you $20 and you can download it, and you get, you know, 10 maps, 5 more modes or something like that, and it adds voice chat.
Who's going to make this stuff?
The Splatoon team will.
But the Splatoon team sounds pretty busy up through most of this year.
Well,
so I have a prediction that sort of goes hand in hand with what John is, so if I can go out of turn, if that's okay.
Yeah.
It's keeping with the evergreen. I expect them to announce the DLC plan for Smash. Announce when Lucas is going to be available, announce the next couple characters, potentially announce more DLC costumes like the Splatoon costumes they've spoken about, potentially DLC stages, although maybe. I expect them to potentially announce additional DLC plans for Mario Kart 8 because it's apparently sold super well.
Awesome.
I'm
totally down for that.
I actually don't expect them to announce Splatoon multiplayer DLC just yet. I think they give that one a little bit more breathing room, but I did see the prospect of them announcing a download for more single player content.
Yeah.
I feel like with releasing more multiplayer stuff this early that not everyone will have, they run the risk of splitting that fan base early, and what they're trying to do is keep that base super vibrant. Like a lot of people in it.
Yeah, and it could be that there were sub teams within the studio who worked on the single player and the multiplayer. And if that's the case, then the multiplayer team is going to be tied up with these continued updates throughout 2015, but the single-player team might have finished the stuff that they had, you know, when the game came out last week, and maybe they continue and just kind of, you know, unburdened by the online, you know, pace. They just keep cranking out more stuff, and then they can kind of release a big bundle of it later.
My biggest reason why I think they wouldn't announce DLC, though, is that the biggest knock on this game has been the lack of content. If they just roll around and said, hey, there's paid DLC now.
Yeah.
Like there's some bad optics there.
Well, that's why I think I think both of you are, you know, I think it's a fine prediction for both of you. I think it should be a post E3 prediction. Like, I don't think they're going to talk about paying anything extra for Splatoon at E3. I think they're going to wait till after August before they talk about paying anything in Splatoon.
My notes actually say, parenthetically, DLC plans for Smash MK8, parenthetically, not Splatoon, dash, maybe some single player in the future.
In the future, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go next, and I'll say that even though there won't be that much 3DS stuff in the digital event, because 3DS really is kind of on the down slope now, I think it's at least partially going to be preempted by NX next year when that stuff starts getting announced, and 3DS is really going to wind down then. But I think this year at E3 we're going to hear about at least one or two exclusive new 3DS games, because they still haven't announced anything other than Xenoblade 3D, which has been out for a while. I have no idea how well it sold, but I think they need to, in order to continue selling the new 3DS when the old one is still kind of available, I think they really need to get out there and show people that they are doing new things with this new hardware that we paid a lot of money for.
Right.
And that frees up other people to say, okay, I guess I'll pay a lot of money for it too, because there's this stuff I can do with it now and there's this stuff coming later. And if I don't pay up for the premium to upgrade my system, I won't get to do the stuff that's later. So I might as well do it now. So they need to keep something in the pipeline for people to look forward to with that takes advantage of the new system. And they have not talked about that at all since Xenoblade came out. So I think they need at least one or two games. They may be digital only. It may be that the install base is still small enough that, you know, these are fairly hardcore people who are out there looking specifically for the new 3DS, and it may be that they are, you know, aware enough about how the 3DS works and about the eShop that they can get away with releasing exclusive games only as digital. And they may, you know, maybe they'll do retail later once more people have new 3DS. But I think that might be a way for them to kind of hedge their bets a little bit as to whether this stuff is going to work, because they're just... there's just a, you know, compared to the total number of people with 3DSs, there's a pretty small crowd who have the new one so far.
Yep.
It's still really new. Yeah. And, you know, when Xenoblade 3D is the only thing announced as an exclusive, most people don't really have that strong of an incentive to go out and buy the new hardware, and Nintendo really needs them to.
Yep.
So that's kind of the basis here. And then I think some of the other major 3DS games will have new 3DS exclusive features. And the key one, maybe the only one that they really need to bother with right now, is Pokemon. I know there's been some speculation that Pokemon might be exclusive to the new system. I think that's insane.
There's no way it's going to happen.
They sold.
It would be the worst selling Pokemon ever if they did
that. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
On the heels of one of the better selling Pokemon ever.
Yeah. So it's going to be available for everyone, but they will put in something pretty cool that only new 3DS can do, and that will be a way to encourage people to upgrade with their biggest selling 3DS franchise. So I think we will hear, I think it's obvious we'll hear about the new Pokemon at E3. And I think it'll have something for new 3DS owners, but it's not going to be completely exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, so Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire, I'm trying to remember how many copies it sold, but it sold, it was like, it may have been like 20 million copies, something just stupid.
For a remake. It's obscene.
Yeah, excuse me, 10 million copies.
Yeah, and they're not going to cut out 90% of the people who bought that game with the next one. They're not idiots, okay? It's not going to be exclusive.
3 million copies were sold in the first 3 days of those games. Million copies!
If they're smart, they use it to sell the new system, but not to like aggressively force people to upgrade.
They can fix the performance issues that have plagued both it and its predecessor since the game went to 3D. It's like this game actually plays correctly and isn't just a fumbling mess every time you show 3D.
Yeah, and I bet they could even do better than that. I think they could even like have some real features, you know, that are exclusive. So even if it's a viewing mode where you use the C-stick, I don't know, but something. So, James, why don't you go next?
Yeah, so I'm getting into my more weird territory. I'm going to go ahead and say this one I've been rolling on for a while, and then some things shifted today, and now I'm even more indecisive about it. So it is the 30th anniversary of Mega Man coming up.
True.
It is the 30th fucking anniversary of Mega Man. Capcom, in case you have forgotten, it is the 30th anniversary of Mega Man. You've probably forgotten who that is. He's a blue robot who shoots things. You should go check your back catalog.
And people love him.
That are still alive that when the last game came out. Most of us have died. But it came out today that Capcom is co-producing a television series in part to celebrate the Mega Man franchise. Because when I think of 30 years of Mega Man, I think of television series.
And I also think of, hey, why put out another game?
You fucking
why
asshole.
Celebrate with another game?
So is this a Mega Man television series?
Yes, a cartoon.
Yep.
Yes.
Correct. Oh, it's a new Mega Man anime. There's been one in the past.
It's not
right?
even an anime. It's Western produced.
Oh, really?
It's Western produced by a Japanese company.
Is it CG?
I don't know. They literally just announced people involved. Huh. That's it. It is a Japanese company is the publisher for it, and then the people who made it are Western. I'm trying to remember who it is that's making it, but like one of the people involved is the person who made the original Big Hero 6 comic. One of them does a TV show on Nickelodeon, I believe.
That is really weird, but there may be precedent because I want to say Captain N and the N Masters was a Western produced series.
Oh yeah, absolutely it was. You can look at the art.
And that had
Mega
Man. Although Mega Man was kind of terrible in that series, but
he was awful. Steven Seagal and Duncan Rollo. Oh, they made Ben 10 and Generator Rex.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what Generator X is, but I've heard of Ben 10.
Mm-hmm. Generator Rex, it was actually was a cartoon, and there was a DS game that was supposed to be decent. Anyway, the prediction here is quote, Capcom breaks our hearts, ? Because here's the thing. Capcom should announce a new Mega Man game at E3. They absolutely should. And it doesn't have to be anything big. Like, just if they just want to take a piss all over Mighty No. 9, like, yeah, we have a Mega Man game, it doesn't look like complete shit. Sup over there, Mighty No. 9?
I could see them teasing and then failing, like with the Square FF7 thing.
Yeah, like
I could
like,
see them pulling off a gaffe of that.
My prediction is, Capcom talks about Mega Man in a way that makes me cry, and like, and like there's a huge range of things that can make me cry. If they came up and said, "Hey, remember Mega Man Zero? Those games were fucking rad. Here's a Mega Man Zero reboot. It's like Mega Man Zero 2, but new graphics." I would just start crying. Possibly blood. I mean,
okay.
It would be,
so you're allowing for tears of joy.
Yeah, but like,
and you're
Capcom
also
is,
allowing for tears of
just
rage.
Anger. But yeah, just anything between just sadness and just pure rage. Like.
So it's actually Capcom will make us cry.
Pretty much about Mega Man specifically.
Okay.
Like because
James may cry.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's the new spinoff. It's the new spinoff. We're gonna have Dante with green hair this time because we just said fuck everything. It's just like this is something that Capcom can't screw up, and I have this sneaking suspicion they will. But what's not going to happen, this is the ultimate prediction, what's not going to happen is they aren't going to just ignore it. They're going to do something. They may just screw it up really badly, and we may wish they hadn't done anything. The fact they announced the cartoon a week before E3 is telling to me personally.
That's interesting. Let me go again real quick. Real quick. It depends on what you guys think about it. I'm expecting to see a Wii U price cut and or a slightly revamped model with increased storage.
Yeah.
And again, maybe a sleeker gamepad, although it may be purely cosmetic.
Yeah, I was saying...
I see them doing kind of an Xbox Slim type of...
See,
thing.
I was
yeah. That was
I,
that
I,
was
I'm
one
with,
of mine, Johnny. I had that they're going to announce a gamepad Lite, which will ship with all new consoles after a certain date.
There you go.
Well, the thing is, it kind of makes sense too because they've actually I think that they just phased out the basic model. Like they're getting rid of that entirely, so they're going to just be down to the deluxe model, and that it's kind of a good time to kind of introduce a new model and phase out the deluxe as well over time.
See, I'm with you on the price cut, and where I'm seeing it actually as opposed to with more memory. Because I mean, you can plug whatever you can plug a USB stick in there and use this memory. It's fine. Where I'm at is a price cut and then bundles of these evergreen titles that they have DLC plans for.
Well, I'll also note, James, you can plug in, but Nintendo specifically tells you not to.
I know, you can, but so, people do.
At the very least, I could see them maybe bundling, this seems so ridiculous, but I could see them bundling new Wii U systems with built-in, or not built-in, but with an included external drive that they've like pre-approved and, you know, may have their logo on it or something. But I mean, that would be like the worst way to handle this issue. But
oh, that'd be the apocalypse. I mean,
they need people to have more storage so they will download more games. And yeah. 32 yep. is not enough.
Nope.
When you look at stuff like Mario Kart and Smash Brothers with all this DLC, and it's just not enough.
I just don't see them making like a new price tier bundle for more storage. Like, I could see them just phasing out the current storage and saying, hey, it's got more storage now.
Yeah, sure.
But to me,
yeah, I mean,
to
Sony
me,
did that for years with PS3.
I mean, they did it with the Xbox too for a little bit. I mean, yeah, it's yeah. To me, the answer here is they do a price cut and then they start doing aggressive bundling of games that they have DLC for. They want to sell you DLC, and that sells at the current price, so you save $10 versus yeah. buying the game separately.
Well, you know where that path leads, don't you, James? PlayStation Plus.
Potentially. But
that's
exactly
what Sony does, is they, you know, all these free, so-called free games that people get for PS Plus, they almost always have DLC.
Sure.
Because they know that if people play it because it's free and they like it, then they're more willing to spend money on DLC, and DLC is like really high profit margin.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's on games that otherwise wouldn't be selling. And if the game's not selling to new people, then nobody's buying the DLC.
Yep. So it's like I could totally see them doing doing a Smash bundle. I think they already did one, but doing a long running Smash bundle, doing a Mario Kart bundle.
Yeah.
Doing a Splatoon. If Splatoon caught fire, like in Japan, it was the number one selling game.
Yeah, it sold through 97% of its shipment.
It's awesome.
Yep.
Like I could see them doing a Splatoon bundle, because that game's got, to steal from Jeff Gerstmann, that game's got fucking style.
Yeah.
What if the Wii U had like ink blots all around it?
Yeah,
or the gamepad at least.
That game's got fucking style. Like just yeah. own it. Like what if the Mario Kart one had looked like it was Baby Park? Like just go nuts. Like there is an avenue here to sell incremental console units, to resell console units. People who already own one just buy this stupid fucking color console. But
just,
also to hook people who have been saying, I'm waiting for blank to get a Wii U, because now you're going to get one thing and then there's more things coming out.
Mm-hmm. It's,
get your
it's
Wii
play
U
it
now.
Loud all over again.
Yeah, and it's to target those people who are like, well, like that looks cool, but maybe one more game and I'll get a Wii. Now it's like now you don't have an excuse.
Yeah, you got Smash,
same price
Splatoon,
it was before.
Mario Kart 8. I mean, what more do you
and
want?
And we're going to give you the
Zelda's
first one.
Zelda's coming.
First hits on the house.
Yeah,
the
but
rest.
This stuff needs to come with a price cut.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Let's make no bones about it.
Yeah,
the Wii
it
was too expensive.
It would be $250 with a game or $200 without.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think
they need to have a $200 model by Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're at the point where they can do that now, hardware wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. They well, I don't care if they can do it. They
yeah,
they
it doesn't really
do
matter
it.
At this
they
point.
And
do it's kind of irrelevant.
And here's the thing: if you take the $10 hit on giving them the game digitally. Well, they weren't going to buy the game if they didn't have the console anyway.
Exactly.
And it's digital, so you don't have any incremental cost except putting the damn piece of paper in the box to get the code.
Exactly. Yep. There's no opportunity cost if the person wasn't going to buy the system otherwise.
Exactly.
Anyway. Yep. Yep.
Hell, totally. You could do that for $220. It could be $200 for no game, $220 with a game.
Totally. I mean, Microsoft's already figured this out. That's one way that they got the price on their system down so fast is they started bundling codes. Because they realize it costs them basically nothing to do that. And that's a way for them to get that system into more people's living rooms really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't buy the system, they can't buy the games.
Nope.
Yep.
So if the first one's on the house, you're just doing Coke dealer strategy at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
First hit's free, the rest you got to pay.
Yep.
It's a time-honored tradition, and
that's
it works. It's been
proven. That's how John hooked me up.
Hey, it worked, man. I got a customer for life now, James. Good looking out, buddy.
Yeah.
John, was that your prediction?
Nope.
Oh, that was mine. Sorry, you should go.
Okay, I predict that. I think we can all agree that Mario Maker is going to be at E3.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Well, yeah, it's going to be at the Best Buy experience.
It's going to be at Best Buy,
it'll be at E3.
Yep.
That would be really fucked up.
Yeah, we're showing it at Best Buy. Not showing it at E3. Sorry, guys. Best Buy, high five right here.
It's going to be like that, the Fossil Fighters game that only the little kids got to see.
All right, so,
so weird.
Mario Maker. I predict that they will announce an app that you can download either to smartphones or to your 3DS that will let you create levels for that game, upload them to the cloud, and then you can import them into Mario Maker.
But you can only play them on the Wii U game, right?
Correct. So it'll okay. It'll be very like simple. It probably it won't be as complex as what you'll be able to do on Wii U. But
yeah, it almost couldn't be.
Just very, very simple ones, but you'll be able to do that and share them and stuff like that. Probably later on, for release later on this year, you know, maybe.
So I've got one that's in the same territory, which is that.
I love it, by the way, John.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a great prediction.
And mine was kind of another Mario Maker feature, which is that the person with the gamepad and the person playing it are. Let's say you make the game on the gamepad and you give the controller to another person who's playing it. The person with the gamepad will be able to modify the level while the other person is playing it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yep.
Like just and maybe not move blocks around, but maybe like
or maybe have a certain number of adjustments they can make. Like you can change it 5 times.
Well, right. John, you've been playing New Super Mario Brothers U, where they do almost exactly that.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's what was my inspiration.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which you're not like remaking the level, but you are inserting these blocks that can be used for almost anything.
Right, and maybe like certain pieces have you know slide flexibility, like you can move them around,
mm-hmm.
Or you can set, or maybe it's you can set them in motion and they just sort of go back and forth. Like because otherwise they can make it so you just can't clear the level, and then that just makes you a dick.
Yeah,
but
you could also use it as a way to get past really really difficult levels. You could have someone basically being a helper if you're able to communicate right. And work together. Then that could be a way that could almost excuse the inclusion of like a bunch of really difficult levels, maybe that even Nintendo or some famous people made.
Yep.
You know, and you could say these levels are so hard, you might need to bring in a friend. You know, and then they showed a mom playing with her kid or whatever the fuck. You know,
everybody's like, super happy in the commercial, of course.
Yeah, you can totally see that. I think it's
And then at the end, the kid just smashes the game back because the level's too hard.
Yep.
this could have been ridiculous.
This could have been avoided.
See, video games do make you violent.
This could have been avoided if only his mother had played with
Mario
him.
Maker. Make your kid psychotic.
James, how many more do you have?
I've got two.
Okay,
go. I got one more.
All right. We will see an appearance by Katsuhiro Hirata at some point during Nintendo's E3 events.
Okay, and this is the Project Treasure guy?
Yes, he is Namco Bandai's face of the company at the moment. Project Treasure is one of his pet projects, but he's also the Tekken guy. Mm. And so here's what I'm thinking. I think Project Treasure makes an appearance.
Tekken Tag 3.
Hold on.
Exclusive for Wii U.
Project Treasure makes an appearance because, in part, they've been sort of giving us these little teasers on it, even though they shouldn't give a shit about this game. But I think they're going to want to talk about how the free-to-play model is being applied. Because, I mean, Nintendo's pushing this game, even though it's a free-to-play game. You would expect them to kind of be like, eh, I mean, we're not super, super involved in this one. But it's an exclusive game on their platform. I expect they're going to talk at least some degree about what this game is and how it's going to work. I mean, they've been very, almost seemingly deliberately sparse on those details. And I think this is also potentially a multiplayer game they could have in their booth that attracts some attention if it looks cool.
So you think that it showing up in the micro was a teaser for a larger unveiling at E3?
I think it was a reminder that
it kind of signaled that it may not really be at E3.
I think it was a reminder that it exists. Because remember that first trailer, we were just laughing because it was just like close up of their eyeballs. Like
it was nothing.
The dumbest freaking trailer in the world.
Huh.
But Katsuhiro Hirata is also a crazy person. And like Nintendo might like having him around just for his energy because he is a fucking nut. But additionally, he is a nut, and he is, as the Tekken man, is at least somewhat overseeing Pokken Fighters, which comes out comes out this summer in Japan in arcades.
Okay.
That means it's probably not going to get a console release this year, because Tekken, generally speaking, comes out 1 year roughly to the day of its arcade release.
Hmm.
However, Nintendo might want to expedite that process because it is a Pokemon game on a console that they need sales for. However, Namco is going to want to get that sweet, sweet arcade money. So instead, I think you're going to see them start talking about the game relatively early because Nintendo is going to constantly be trying to have them push the release date for the console version, even when Namco is going to probably want to sit on the console release date. So I would expect that in Japan, that game may come out before the next E3. So it may, I'm not predicting it will, but it may make an appearance, even if it's only in passing. Because, again, they're going to want to have Hirata around because he's a fucking lunatic. And he is amazing to be around. So he can give them some extra energy because he is a nut.
Do we know if the arcade version of Pokken Fighters is running on some kind of version of the Wii U architecture.
I believe it is.
So it's kind of a maybe a successor to the whole Triforce GameCube
thing. I mean,
thing.
That's all the Tekken games.
Because that could speed up the conversion process.
Yeah, it's never usually an issue of the time to convert it. It's that they want the game to be out there and sort of get its primary arcade burn in Japan.
Okay, let me throw a curveball at you, James. What if while Pokken Fighters is out in arcades this summer and the rest of the year in Japan making its money there, if it's pretty quick and easy for them to make a Wii U home version, what if they release that in America first where the arcade version is completely a non-factor?
Potentially. I mean...
And Europe, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I mean, there's like Dave and Buster's that could put it in and stuff. I mean, they've got...
They're not going to make any serious money off
it. Namco has a relationship with them. Like, they put in like... Fucking Star Wars Battle Pods, Dave and Buster's.
But you know the way arcades work is that they could release the arcade version over here after the console version comes out, and the people who go to Dave and Buster's usually aren't real big console gamers.
Right, yeah. I mean,
so they'll still pay to play it. They won't care that it's already out on Wii U.
There's some flexibility there, yeah. So maybe they push the timeline on that game. I'm not necessarily predicting it will be there, but I think there's a certain amount of flirting going on between Nintendo and specifically Mr. Hirata. Like, he's shown up twice now in Nintendo Directs, which is insane because, like I said, he is a crazy person. So I do wonder if, like, this goes back to Nintendo's, you know, what they did last year, which is let's engage these third-party companies on super specific projects so we can still have involvement with them and keep that relationship open.
Hmm. Well, I'll go next, and I know this... I'm not very special making this one because a lot of people have predicted this, but I do believe in it and I wanted to get it on here. And you guys, it's controversial enough, you guys might still disagree. I think Zelda for Wii U is not technically at E3 and that it will not be physically at the show in any form, but I do think there will be a trailer for it that will show either at the Nintendo World Championships, which are the day before the E3 press conferences start, even, or it will be in the big Nintendo Direct digital event, or if not both. It may be that the people in attendance at the World Championships get a sneak preview, and then it shows up 2 days later online for everybody else to watch. But I think Zelda, I think that it will be a look but don't touch thing with Zelda, but I think we'll see more of it.
I don't think it'll be playable.
They've already said it won't be.
Yeah, I believe them there, but I don't think they let E3 go by without reminding people that, hey, we're working on Zelda, and it looks fucking awesome, and you should go buy a Wii U because you want to play this next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of assumed that they'll at least show something new to show the progress.
I mean,
they've
said it won't be there, and they didn't qualify that with it won't be playable. They just said it won't be here.
Right, and I think they were lying. I think they will have changed their mind by the time E3 comes
around. I don't think it'll be at the tournament, though, and here's my reasoning for that, because if they do that before... their Nintendo digital event, mm-hmm. like, it sort of takes the piss out of everything. It's such a loud...
only show it to the people physically in attendance.
Yeah,
and
but people
online.
Are going to have cell phone cameras, and I mean, it's going to be such
okay,
a loud...
Fine, but...
It's going to be such a loud explosion, everyone's ears will still be ringing 12 hours
later.
Yeah,
I could maybe see... I mean, there's been rumors that they would debut, like, a new Punch-Out game. I could see them doing something like that at the World Championships, maybe. Like, a lesser title, something like that.
Hmm, yeah. Yeah, Punch-Out would actually be, if there's a competitive mode, it'd actually be pretty awesome to do for, like, a final round.
Yeah, like a surprise round or something like that.
Or even just beat King Hippo or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
there's
just something...
That'd be cool.
Like, there's something about the trying to not, you know, eat your own thunder before you actually start your show that makes me feel like... Ugh.
Fair point. But regardless, so you agree it will be at E3. I think all three of us agree that Zelda will show up
agree.
At E3 in some form.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Or not, if not at E3, but around E3.
Yeah, I think they really have to reassure people that it's actually moving along.
I agree.
I could see them talk about it and then maybe drop a video right after E3. Like,
okay.
Here it is. Like we don't want it to consume what we're trying to accomplish during E3. Like, this is, we are focusing on these games right now, and then like 2 or 3 weeks later, like, hey guys, remember Zelda? Here's Zelda. They have, there is a Zelda video that will be released that is set to a calendar based on the timing of E3. Now, when on that calendar that is, how much they've time shifted, I don't know.
I think we'll be talking about a new Zelda trailer during E3.
I think we would if they don't show one anyway. We'd still be talking about it. Like
we're talking about the absence.
We're just going to talk about
it. Yeah, talking about the lack thereof.
That may not be the conversation Nintendo wants.
Man, there was no new trailer for Zelda. Fuck.
Yes.
So, John, what's your next final prediction?
Final prediction. This one you can kind of argue sensibly for or against.
It's a good start. Those are fun.
My prediction is that Minecraft will be announced for Wii U with skin packs for Nintendo characters.
Published by Microsoft.
Yeah, published by Microsoft. It's on every other format, every other platform under the sun. Microsoft, I'm sure they want to pimp it out everywhere.
I mean, that's why they bought Mojang.
Yeah.
They didn't buy it because they thought, oh, these guys are super talented. They bought because they wanted fucking Minecraft.
And they sure as hell didn't buy it for Scrolls.
Yeah.
They bought it for Minecraft. So, and I mean, they don't care about it being on PS4 or Vita or anything else.
Or iOS.
Yeah,
well,
they don't
a different
even care.
Part of, it's a different part of the megalith, too.
Yeah.
It's not the Xbox division that has... It's a whole different division of the company.
Yep. Yeah, they just... So that's what I predict. Now the argument against this is, why would you? I mean, they already have one kind of creation game coming out, Mario Maker. Why would you release another one? But Minecraft is a thing unto itself, so you could see it going both ways.
In a lot of ways.
It certainly does. I just wonder who needs Minecraft to be on Wii U. I mean, there's a prestige or at least a keeping up with the Joneses aspect to it, but. Anybody who would want to play Minecraft and has a Wii U also has something else that you can play Minecraft on.
This is true. Yeah. This is true. But I mean,
so who's going to buy it?
It's Minecraft. It's Minecraft, right? It's like I asked the same thing.
Honestly,
you know,
you're right. People probably will buy it just to have it on there.
Well, that's the thing.
Like,
the thing is,
if
you could
gamepad
playing with the gamepad. Yeah, playing with the gamepad would be
a better experience.
Yes, that's the thing. I think a lot of people would buy it because I mean, the thing is, this is not going to be a lot of money, right? Minecraft is incredibly cheap, so you know, so it's almost like a no loss for Nintendo.
What if they can get someone reputable to get on video and be like, I think this is the best version of Minecraft we've ever made?
You know, they could absolutely.
I think they probably could. Yeah.
Yep.
They get the producer up there. It won't be anybody we've ever heard of, but it's like it says he's been working on Minecraft for the past 7 years.
Yeah. He hasn't shot himself
yet. The Wii
U
version might be the best one we've ever made because it has. This cool gamepad feature, and you can still play with your friends, and yada yada yada. Yeah, that might be.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, I could just see the
way to do it.
Yeah, I could. I could see them
Scrolls
selling.
Scrolls announced exclusively for Wii U because Microsoft wants no fucking part of it.
Yeah, I could. I could just see them though. You know, selling it. You know, hey, it's great. You know, creating Minecraft stuff on the gamepad, and you know, it's. Hey.
Cool. Yeah.
We'll see.
I'll buy it. Well, no, I won't buy Minecraft.
I'm about to say, will you?
I'll buy that your prediction is maybe true. Nah, I've got Minecraft and I never play it. It's not my jam.
I played it on 360 for a little while, then Ty came in and blew up my base.
Yeah. And yeah. It's really cool. I love the game, but I wouldn't really spend a whole lot of time with it, but it's fun to just mess around with every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, James, your final prediction?
So, Nintendo's sort of given me the juice for this one, and in fact, they gave me some more on this little mini direct they did. I don't ever want to see Bill Trinan in bad CG effects ever again, but I expect next week we're going to get a lot of that because Nintendo's fucking lost their minds. But I predict that Nintendo's going to continue to go back to the well and grab these 3DS games that other companies have just not released in the West. So they've done a few in the last couple months, and they announced a few more today, or not today, the last week. That Little Battlers game we talked about, that game came out a while ago. And it just never came over. So I'm not sure what, but I... well, actually, I'm going to take a step back.
What
so,
if they did that Capcom third-person shooter game? What was that called?
Crap.
It's like 2 years ago it came out in Japan, and it was supposedly pretty awesome.
It was, yeah, it was supposed to be amazing.
I can't even remember the name. It's been so long, but that'd be amazing if someone dredged that up and actually...
Yeah, like so to that end, though, there are these 3DS games that are, you know, semi-legendary because they've never come out in the West, and Nintendo's done a bunch of them in the last couple of years. They've announced a few more.
Are you talking about EX Troopers?
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Thank you. I was going crazy. I was about to Google it myself.
I see them announcing a couple more 3DS games that have never been localized. Maybe one, maybe two, maybe four. Who knows? Just 3DS games that are never been localized that the original publisher has just passed on that they're going to pick up and take the rest away. Because they need content for that system right now, and I don't think they're making it. But what if you have a treasure trove of content that never got released in most of the world that all you have to do is get translated over to English, just hand it off to one of the localization houses and say, yeah, go nuts.
Are you thinking these are retail releases, or could this be like a new digital sub-brand?
It could be digital only. I'm thinking they're probably going to be full releases because their role isn't necessarily just to gin up sales, but it's to give the impression of vibrancy in the platform.
It's to keep 3DS in the stores.
Yeah.
There's a value to that. I mean, could we lump in my beloved and much needed Dragon Quest VII?
Possibly, or
am I stupid for still wanting that to happen?
Never.
I mean, the question at this point is, do they just go straight to DQ8? Because
they should do both, but 7 is the one that none of us have played. Really?
No, you're right. It is the one.
Eight was actually a popular game. 7 is like the mysterious one that like I really want to try.
Yeah, like there are. Yeah, I don't know. Like I feel like 8 makes more economic sense for Nintendo. If that makes
I mean, sure. It's a much better known game. It's a game that people actually have nostalgia for. Whereas right. Dragon Quest VII, nobody fucking played. It came out in English, but it was a terrible translation, and fucking nobody played it because it was 2000, and
no one cared about Dragon Quest at that time. Yeah,
that game was released as Dragon Warrior 7. That should tell you a lot about that game and where it stands culturally with us here in the West. So
yeah, that game is...
It's a much more of an unknown quantity to over here. So yeah, 8 is the way to go if you just want to make the most sales. And but 8's not necessarily finished, right? I mean, that's not even out in Japan yet.
It's coming out pretty soon, though.
Yeah, I believe August. That. Hey, I played over 100 hours of Dragon Quest 8, so... I would not be complaining if they announced that it's coming over here. I would probably play through it again.
Like, there are two Dragon Quest Monsters games that never came out.
Well,
they
they need to do 7 before those, though.
But my thing is, those might be super easy.
Yeah, they might.
But, like, 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah.
Never came out.
I hope you're right. I'd be a very happy boy if that prediction is true. I'm going to do the very last one here, and it's... I don't know. This might be a little bit negative, but it's balanced. So I think the Treehouse Live that they started last year will be better than last. I think it'll be actually improved this year, and I think it will continue to be done very well. I thought they had a very slick production last year and a really solid plan for that, and it was a humongous hit. And I'll be pissed off that I won't get to watch it because I'll actually be at E3 and. It's kind of like a separate show that's going on the whole time that we can't keep up with because we're there. And it ends up being it's also very difficult to kind of go back and catch up with it after the fact because you're kind of burned out once E3 is over. So it affects a small number of us. But for me personally, I'll be sad that I'm missing it.
Yeah, I've never seen – I didn't watch any of it last year except for what we saw in person.
Yeah, you and I actually – physically stood there right next to the camera guy and watched the entire Xenoblade Cross thing. But and we may do that again this year for something else. But anyway, I think Treehouse Live will be very popular again. I think they'll do a great job with it. And I think it'll be even better. But to counterbalance that, I think media access to Nintendo at E3 this year will be worse than ever. It's already been shitty for the past few years, and it's going to be even worse this year. And I don't just, this isn't a specific complaint about Nintendo World Report or the way we're treated by Nintendo. This is basically how everybody gets treated by Nintendo. Nintendo's like, we don't need you media people. We're going to speak directly to the consumers. And I get my argument, I made this last year, I'll make it again. They can do both. And it might be advantageous for them to do both. I mean, yeah. I feel like Nintendo's not in a great position right now to be telling fuck you to people who can like spread the word about their games, but that's exactly what they've been doing lately. And I'm very displeased about it. I know that's kind of a selfish thing because obviously it affects me directly and I like being able to go to Nintendo things. I like to talk to Nintendo people, and I don't think I'm going to get to do much of that at E3 this year, and that sucks. That's a big part of why I fell in love with E3 in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think there's some value in them talking to me and then me talking to everybody who listens to this.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's even less of a chance this year because they're going to have, what, 5,000 people that are from semi-public?
Oh, yeah.
You know? Is that a Nintendo thing or an E3
thing?
That's
an E3 thing.
That's an E3 thing.
Yeah.
That's weird. Thing.
So it's
5,000 people is a lot of fucking people.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
It's going to make the show noticeably worse for those of us who go every year, yep. I suspect.
Yep. Now, yeah. Now, I mean, that's the thing. At past E3s, you always had people that pretty much just snuck in there because they knew somebody or they were like famous or whatever. You know,
that's limited by the people.
John,
who
I met Bear Grylls at E3. You shut your mouth. I met Bear fucking Grylls.
Who else have we seen at E3? We've seen all kinds of
Elijah
people.
Wood.
Elijah
a girl
Wood
from The Real World. Britney Spears' baby daddy ex girlfriend was there one year playing Zombie U.
Yep.
Nice.
I mean, I you know
people
Mr.
Have,
T,
yeah.
Stan Lee. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. People who have no reason to be there.
The lead singer from Jane's Addiction, Perry
Farrell. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. I saw him roaming around Nintendo a couple years ago.
Yeah, they just know somebody.
Yeah, there's always people there who don't belong and should not be there. But this year, it's going to be.
A lot of magnitude worse.
And
now, look, now apparently that, they're going to be invited, so it's not just going to be like you know the people off the street kind of thing. But
it doesn't matter. They're me.
They're giving
the
it
floor.
Out through Twitter, John.
There are people
I mean,
in my way, and I've got places I need to be.
Yes,
I mean,
I totally
mean, like,
with you.
Like,
so
like
fuck those people.
Companies have given them out.
Fuck the 5,000
giving them out. Like,
I know,
hey,
I know, it sounds like an elitist douchebag, but it makes our show worse. It really,
hey, favorite this tweet. We'll enter you in the drawing.
We're not there to play games. We're not just there to play games and have fun. We are working. We're trying to do a good job. We're trying to provide a service for the people at home who can't be there, and so the people who are there and have really nothing better to do than stand around and form long lines.
Yeah, and they're not going to give a fuck.
Can go fuck themselves.
At all.
Seriously.
Like, they're not going
to
give a
shit.
They
make E3 really, really difficult to put up with. And it makes it hard for us to do our jobs.
I mean, the best thing we have going for it, and this is the little, I mean, I don't give a shit outing this, is that if we really need to play a game, we can go up to, like, Nintendo's booth and go, like, look, there is, like, a 4.5-hour line to play this game.
Yeah.
I need to play this game.
Sometimes, but the worse the crowds are, the more it limits our time with the games.
That's true. But Nintendo's booth, thankfully, they generally, most games have enough units that you can play it. They really only screwed up last year on two games. One of them was Hyrule Warriors, which just did not have enough.
Like, James, let me just say, you weren't there in the days of 2002, 2003, 2004. It was a serious problem. And the more people E3 just lets through the floodgates, the more it will be like those years where it was like almost physically excruciating to get around on the show floor.
Yeah, it was a freaking
zoo. I understand. We can go back 2 years when Capcom was next to Nintendo's booth and they had that stupid display that they were doing. They had the Dead Rising display in the middle of the aisle, and it caused this huge traffic backlog because what's his name? The Street Fighter guy was standing on top of a motorcycle yelling at zombies. And, like, you just couldn't get to Nintendo. You literally could not get to Nintendo's booth. It was not possible.
Yeah, that's E3 right there, you know?
Yep.
Just
it's
stupid.
I can't get to my appointment with Activision because Bam Margera is doing kickflips on a giant half pipe that's in the middle of Activision's booth.
Yep.
And there's 1,000 people standing around watching it.
Sting,
and all I
want
to do is... All I want to do is go play a demo so I can write about it for people for no money.
It's like Sting is wrestling. Tony Hawk is on the half pipe. It's like,
oh God, that's right. I saw Sting at E3.
Yep, Sting was wrestling somebody. I forget who, but he was wrestling somebody.
I saw Sting at E3 in 2009.
Yep. I've seen it all,
oh,
man.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
God.
E3 is
so
stupid.
Weird.
E3 is wonderful.
That's why I think I'm down
going to E3 for the 15th time, and I'm traumatized by E3, and I want to have its baby. I don't even know how to just talk about
E3. It blows my mind
anymore.
When I realize I've been 4 times and I haven't completely lost my mind. 15, I couldn't handle it. But like, I'm down to every other.
I have a strong constitution, James. What can I say?
I think
it's getting weaker the older I get.
I think every other year is what I'm gonna do. Like, I'll do a year on, I'll do a year off. I'll do a year. Like, I like doing the home team role because it keeps me grounded when I go back.
It keeps
to the
you
show
sane.
The next time.
Whereas E3 is my Call of Cthulhu.
Right, like,
it is slowly driving me mad and making me die, and I love it, and I can't stop.
Yeah, the thing is, once you're in it, you can't get away from it. Home team, home team. At least you can shut the computer off.
Well, I can go get something to eat.
Yeah, right. You can go have a bottle of whiskey.
If I'm taskmastering, I can go like, all right, guys, does everybody have something to work on? Okay, I'm gonna go get lunch.
Yep.
It's like 3:30 in the afternoon. I didn't have breakfast.
Yeah. E3. Yeah. I'm gonna go get lunch. You're just like, whatever. Oh my god, I just want to get away from all of these people.
E3, you're eating a Graham bar that Carly brought over from Europe and didn't eat on the flight that she's handed to you that may or may not be 3 to 4 years old.
Yep. I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes I've almost fallen asleep in the bathroom at E3.
I can't believe it though.
When you go in there, it's like if you close the stall door, it's so quiet and dark, and you're alone, and you're away from the people, and you're not doing anything. And I've almost fallen asleep because it's such a stark contrast to the rest.
It's like when you come out of like a 3 hour like rock concert that's really really loud, and you know how like you come out and you really can't hear anything, but you're just like, oh god, it feels so nice to just be in some open air.
I can move my arms. Yes.
I once ate the media lunch, the media room lunch, and couldn't taste it. And I looked at who I was with and said, is this just super bland? And he's like, nah. And I'm like, oh, all right.
All right, we're done. I can't take any more E3 talk. It makes it too real, and it's already pretty damn real for me.
I look forward to being in 2016. And then just like being where you are and not going, fuck, why am I doing this again?
Yep. So anyway, you know, if your mind has been ignited by any of the stuff we've been talking about with E3 or the Nintendo Direct or anything else, if there's anything you would like us to talk about before E3, this is your last chance, because we're hoping to do some emails next week, and that will, I don't know how long of a show that will be. I don't know if we're going to have time for new business or anything. I'll have to talk to Guillaume about it and see what he can take in the heat of E3 coming up. But we're hoping to have something for you before the show starts officially, although it will probably come out right at the very beginning of the show, right before Nintendo's big video. So it's not a good time to talk about announcements or make predictions, because it'll be right on the cusp. But it might be a good time to answer some emails. So please send in questions, comments, your own predictions, whatever you'd like to hear us talk about, to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. That is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Or go to the article for this episode or any episode over at nintendoworldreport.com. There's a link there to send us an email. And while you're there, you can also check out all the other stuff that you hear about in Now Playing and a bunch that you don't hear about in Now Playing. You'll find links to our YouTube channel where you can catch up on all the videos we're going to be doing throughout E3. Lots of videos will be going up almost live, or like semi-live, really soon after they're recorded. So it is, if you want the most up-to-date coverage, keep an eye on our website. Keep refreshing your podcast feed, because we have some pretty ambitious plans about what we're going to be doing there.
God,
we hope there will be a lot of podcasts coming out during E3, and it will be hard for you to catch up with. And be watching our YouTube page, NWRTV, Nintendo World Report TV on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter, @Nintendo_NWR and @RFNPodcast. That's where you'll find out what we're doing, and you'll be able to hear and read and view all the stuff that we're going to be doing for E3.
And I may be running a Twitter account at some point. So
if you James see, in charge of Twitter seems if you, like a bad
running
idea.
Or ruining.
Hey, I did it in 2013, and we only got like 10 complaints.
Oh, okay, that's pretty good for you, James. All
it's
right,
less than you get per podcast.
That's true.
That is definitely going to wrap up this episode. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks James and John for being here. Guillaume, we wish you well, and we hope you're back next week when we do some listener mail. But for now, that's all. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Later.